three cinephiles have come together to bring you strong opinions, controversial statements, epic battles, and plenty of fun.
Introducing our host,
the man who watches 52 movies a week, drinks 52 beers a movie, loves women but hates the woman, from the foreign land of Canada, our host, Mood616. He is widely known as the man who talks too much. His worst enemies are Postmaster P and Pee Wee Herman. He said Hellraiser was overrated and Leprechaun Origins wouldn't suck. He's the full-blooded half-Mexican, JP. Finally, we have the man who doesn't talk enough. He is best friends with Sean S. Cunningham. His favorite horror movie is Gummo. He is your favorite Jew and mine, Jeremy. Together, they are known for extending a helping hand to VampireCons everywhere. They are the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror.
Yes, yes, y'all. What's going on, everybody? That is right. The 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast is officially back. This is episode 23 and season 2 opener. Yeah, what's up, guys? I am your host, Mood616, and of course, I've got my awesome, awesome co-host, Jeremy, also known as NES Ruler 22, and we've got JP, also known as Double Shot J. What's up, guys?
What is going on, everyone? Hope everyone had a fantastic summer.
And I hope your house didn't catch on fire.
And I hope your house didn't catch on fire.
Oh, man, we didn't even, yeah.
Yeah.
JP, that really sucks, man. That really sucks.
But JP, like, yeah. JP was a hero, so.
Well, yeah, I was, actually.
Well, you not only saved your stuff, you saved your house, too, which is, yeah, you know, the number one thing in that situation. But, yeah, but, I mean.
You know how everybody always thinks, like, okay, you know, if my house was on fire, I'd do this and do that. And, like, you always think of the stuff that you have and how it really wouldn't mean nothing to you when, you know, lives are on the line. I got to be 100% honest. As the house was on fire and I was running through and trying to, like, figure shit out, in the back of my head, I was thinking about all my shit. And I was like, it's going to be all gone. Everything. All my DVDs. All this hard work. All gone. And it was really, really stressful and sad. And pretty much everything came out unhurt, though.
I know if Moods lost his hip-hop and DVD collection, he would go insane.
Yeah, I'd probably find the nearest bridge and just take a head dive off there. But yet, you know, to be honest, JP, I think it's kind of natural, though, that you'd probably just – you'd worry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, most people wouldn't admit. They're like, oh, man, my shit's going to be gone, you know. But come on. Let's be frank here. We're all collectors, and it'd be devastating. Of course you're going to think that, right? But – I'm really happy that everything worked out for you.
Yeah.
Nobody got hurt. There wasn't, you know, a complete loss. And, of course, your Scream Factory collection is safe.
Yeah, I honestly was thinking of the Scream Factories, too. That was, like, the main thing. And then I was thinking about, like, my dog. Like, those were, like, my like, big things. My grandma had already been safely removed from the house. And I was, you know, just – there was at one point when I could not go – I thought in my head, like, I can't go back in again. It's so much smoke in there. And before I walked out the door the last time, which in my head, it was the last time, I looked at the fire and I pretty much accepted that everything I owned was going to be gone in a couple minutes. And that was one of the worst feelings I've ever had in my entire life. But luckily I did, you know, get up enough courage to figure shit out and stop that from being a reality.
I mean, you didn't run back in and save Leprechaun 4? I mean, that's the one thing I would save. Just run in there and be like, where's Leprechaun 4?
You know, to be honest, I thought about your situation and, you know, as devastating as it would be to lose, like, you know, all my personal stuff, but you know how you mentioned your dog? I have three, and of course I would have went after them first.
I swear to God, I was not leaving without my dog. I told my cousin that. I started tearing up when I couldn't find him, dude. It was sad, but he was already out. He walked past my legs. I didn't even see him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would honestly push my wife out of the way to grab my dogs first.
you would pull an Amityville Horror. You would go back.
Yeah, you know what, man? I always gave that shit crap before I had a dog. I was like, you can go back in a crazy haunted house to get your dog. But I think I would. I would
get
that bond,
man. You know, it's hard to explain to somebody that doesn't have an animal, you know, but it's there. It's that bond. It's really tough to break. So, But yeah, JP, on a lighter note, did you have anything positive happen this summer to you?
Got a driver's license.
No, not really.
Got a car, man.
I did get a car, which I'm working on my license. It should have been a long time ago. A lot of issues when I was younger, like, kind of prevented me from really getting them when I needed them, and then, like, just headaches after that dealing with this license thing. But I finally got, like, my permit and a car, and, like, you know, I've been driving, practicing and stuff. I think I'm pretty good pretty soon, so I will be getting my license pretty soon. You know, that's pretty bad. I still don't have them, you know, but I ain't ashamed.
Yeah, that's
driving
good.
Driving sucks. It's too much money anyway.
Oh, man.
Especially when you drive a gas guzzler.
Yeah. What about you, Jeremy? How'd your summer go this year?
It was pretty good. I took a few summer school classes, and besides that, I was drained from the spring semester. So besides that, I pretty much just chilled out. Even though I shouldn't have, I should have found a job or something like that. But besides that, I just chilled and watched movies, because I barely watched anything from January until May. So it's good just to relax for a little bit and not have to, you know, worry about anything. But now I'm back to school and back in the swing of things.
Mm-hmm.
And this semester is going to be a little bit rougher than last one, but you know, I'll survive.
But I mean, it's looking pretty healthy and fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I seen the breakdown of some of the films that you guys are going to be doing. Really, really cool stuff, yeah, man. To be honest, I was really, really jealous after, you know, reading that list of films. I just wanted to say, fuck work. I just want to go back to school and do that. I mean, just enjoy it while you can, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that women in horror list is pretty fresh.
Yeah. Especially since she added Miss 45 to the list. I'm like, oh.
That's such a good choice. That is like the ultimate right there. That's such a good one.
Well, what have you been up to, Mr. Moods?
I had a busy summer, you know, with work. I was out of town lots this summer for work and, you know, did a lot of camping and stuff. Just basically enjoyed the summer. Surprisingly, we didn't like have any rain all summer, which was amazing. Hot summer. I really couldn't ask for more. I had a really good time this summer.
Did you drink a lot of beer?
Drank a lot of beer, attended way too many weddings. Probably drank way too much, but
I've never been to a wedding, and I always hear you talking about like, oh, I got a wedding to go to, or like this. I've never even been to a wedding ever.
Oh man. I'm leaving for Vegas tomorrow, and I'm actually in a wedding party there, so it'll be the last one of the year and probably one of the last weddings for a long time. I don't have anybody else that's, you know, getting married anytime soon, which is such a bonus. I mean, they're exhausting. When you're not in a wedding party, they're okay because you can relax, but when you're in one, it's a lot of work. You don't realize how much work is actually involved. But, you know, besides that, I'm going to enjoy Vegas. But overall, the summer is fantastic. I watched like hundreds of films, literally. I swear,
you do that weekly.
Yeah, you do that anyway.
I watched so much stuff. You know, a lot of shit, of course.
I don't know how you get bored, man. I would get bored after a while.
It's because I watch so many movies that I'm just picking up, and, you know, the first time watches and stuff. And I don't know. I really do mix it up. Like, I'll watch a lot of older stuff and the newer stuff. So it doesn't ever get old to me. I had a couple times this summer where I watched about five or six, maybe even seven films in a row that I didn't care for. And I was like, holy fuck, is this what it's coming to? And then, last week I picked up a bunch of films. I went on a spending spree. I was out shopping, physical shopping. It wasn't actually online. It was actually in stores.
Ooh, you haven't done that since April, man.
I know. It's been a while. And I found a bunch of stuff that I, you know, wanted to pick up. I heard good things.
Activity.
I didn't watch any of those. But I picked up five movies, watched them all in the same night, of course, because, you know, I always have to mini marathon. And it'd been so long.
Did you watch Septic Man?
I did. The thing is, that all five movies that I watched in a row were fantastic. And I was just like, this is why I love watching movies, mini marathons. I mean, this is what it's all about.
I take it Septic Man was good then.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. But yeah, overall, I had a good summer. I can't really complain. Can't complain. And it's pretty much coming to an end. It's starting to get pretty cold at night. So,
you know what was pretty awesome? Today when I left work, it was the first day where I like felt the cool, like the coolness of fall approaching.
Me too, JP. It's like, yeah, it was, man, like 65 degrees today. Went outside, I was like, fuck, I want to go to a haunted house because like, it just feels like October. I got pumpkin coffee in my hand. It's 65 degrees outside.
I'm starting to see Halloween, owls and stores.
October is the best month of the year, man.
Of course it is.
Yes, yes. Yeah, October totally is the best month of the year. Yeah. Multiple reasons. It's the start of the NHL season. You got baseball playoffs, my birthday, and of course, everyone's favorite time of the year, Halloween. It's such an amazing year.
Which we missed last year on the show because we didn't start until after Halloween, like right after Halloween, November, I believe we started. So this will be our first year with the celebration of Halloween in the show.
Yeah, that's right. We started, the second week in November, I believe? Because it seemed like, you know, we started up the show and then all of a sudden we were doing like a year-end show or the Christmas show. Yeah, that's interesting. But, yeah. All right. So I guess that's it for our summer stories. Nothing too interesting. I guess we kind of all took it pretty easy this summer.
Yeah. Boring shit.
Yeah. But, anyways, JP, you got some news for us?
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life.
Death.
I do have some news for you guys. But it's not very good news this time of year. This is kind of like the slumpiness, like, right? It seems like stuff starts getting announced a little bit more in October. First up, we do have announcement or a hint at or something like that. A new Blade film with Wesley Snipes is kind of being talked about. And since he was released from prison in 2013... it's looking good that he's trying to make a comeback with the Blade series. He is 52-year-old Wesley Snipes coming back into the film.
Man. Was Wesley Snipes not in the new – he was in the new Expendables film, right?
Yes.
In the part three? That's awesome. Cool.
I don't know. I didn't think the third Blade was very good, to be honest.
Yeah, that was direct-to-video, wasn't it?
Nah, I saw it in theaters. Oh. And I was kind of...
No, it definitely had a theatrical release, yeah.
That was the one with... The first two kick ass. I like them both.
Blade 2 is good. I like Blade 2.
Ryan Reynolds and What's-Her-Face was in that one. I always remember the part in the film where I think it's the chick. She's, like, uploading music into her iPod, and it's, like, ripping. It's, like, going so fast for that time. Like, it doesn't go in there that fucking fast. That's bullshit.
No, now we watch it, and we're like, look how slow that shit's
going. Yeah, exactly. It's so unrealistic. Now you're like, holy fuck, that's slow. But yeah, I know what you mean. The third one wasn't overly the greatest.
I haven't watched them in a while. I have them on Blu-ray. I just haven't watched them in a long time.
Yeah, I seen that there was a triple pack Blu-ray for, I think it was around $10 at Walmart. And I was going to pick it up. It had all three Blade movies on Blu-ray. But I'm not a huge fan of the series. It's kind of action-y. And I've stated many times in the past that I'm not a big action and horror fan, like, combined. But I think I need to revisit those first two, though.
I think you might like them a little more, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, okay, this release that you're talking about, are the movies on separate discs?
Yeah.
I actually don't know.
They're like the Austin Powers set and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's not bad, then. $10. Fuck. Yeah. Pick it up. Check it out.
Yeah, I think it might have been 15, and that might have been the deal breaker, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to look back and possibly pick that up. But the second piece of news is Lars von Trier, right?
Yeah.
Nailed it. He is working on a TV series, an American English-speaking TV series. It is called The House That Jack Built. And it is going to be currently set I don't know if they're going to – shooting will be in 2016. So that's quite a while away. I think they're still working on the script. But he did say it would be a TV series. You'd never seen anything like it before and never will see it again. You better hold your breath.
Now, is this going to be on cable or is it going to be on HBO or something like that? Because Lars von Trier doing a cable show, I don't know about that one, but it's on HBO or Showtime or something that. I think it
could be. I agree with that, man. If it's like an HBO series, I think it could be pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
But like a
Lars von Trier is way too out there and way too.
I don't
think we'll get the full extent of Lars von Trier's genius if he makes a cable TV show, because he's going to be edited and cut mostly to shit, as we know. Even his films, he gets cut from shit. So him trying to make a cable TV show, I think it's going to be a ginormous failure.
It's got to be a cable show.
But if it's on, it has on like, to be. If it's on like FX or AMC, you know, they have a little bit more leeway than, let's say, NBC or something like that. But if I don't think it's going to succeed, because it's Lars von Trier is just too out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't think the general public will.
I can't even imagine like a major network even being interested in his work.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm kind of leaning towards it would totally be like a cable thing. You know, especially HBO. I mean, why not HBO, right? Yeah. I mean, they've tackled so many different types of shows and whatnot, so he fits kind of that mold. I think it would work perfect. It's pretty intriguing.
Yeah,
definitely interesting. I can't really say much on it because I've still not seen. I don't think I've seen any of his films, but I did grab the Antichrist Criterion Blu-ray. I've yet to watch it, but that's something I'll probably do pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my least favorite of his films.
Really?
And that's actually, you know, that's interesting too, because I think it's a pretty interesting film.
I'm not saying it's a bad film, but
I get
out of Nymphomaniac, Melancholia, and Antichrist. I mean, Melancholia is my favorite for sure. The cinematography in that movie is fucking brilliant, and then Nymphomaniac. But Antichrist, it's a good film, but it's my least favorite of his.
I think the
major films.
That film sold me, you know, with just having William Dafoe in it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, William Dafoe is such a good fucking actor.
He's in Nymphomaniac, so.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So the next piece of news is a trailer release, and ABC's A Death 2 trailer hit. That film will be released in VOD platforms October 2nd, with a theatrical run set for October 23rd, or 31. Why the hell did I say 23rd? October 31.
That's pretty late, like long after the VOD release. I'm surprised about that.
It's about normal. It's usually, you know, 3 to 4 weeks after.
Yeah, but it'll probably only be in like a dozen theaters and art house theaters.
Definitely.
I was interested that, you know, that you got the date wrong at first when you said 23rd. Then you corrected yourself and said the 31st. Why didn't you just say Halloween?
Because I'm reading.
Bust JP's balls already.
Dude, I thought that was very intriguing. You know, and October 31st, like it's like a total random day to everybody listening. They're like, oh yeah, the 31st. Yeah, Thursday or Friday.
It's a Friday this year.
Oh, I'm just busting your balls.
That is pretty awesome. It is on the weekend. But no, have you guys seen the trailer to this?
Yeah.
No.
I normally don't watch trailers, but I was a little bit interested just to see like the tone, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, it doesn't look that awesome to me.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be like VHS 2, that's for sure, but I'll watch it anyway. I mean, how many times are they going to be able to do this?
Will this one make your top 10 list?
With the amount of films that I've watched this year so far, probably, but it could change. No, it's probably not going to make my list.
I've been banging off the 2014 releases lately.
Because ABC's A Death 1, it did make your top 10 list.
Oh, we're going to get into this, JP. But
you know what did it?
Maniac, yes.
Fucking Maniac.
Still busting my balls about that shit.
Good times. Good times.
Maybe we'll have some more shockers this year.
Yeah, so ABC's A Death 2. I still love the concept. I still think that it could be awesome, but I don't know, man. I just don't think they're putting. I actually don't. On paper, shouldn't it be a complete success? Like, I don't understand why the trailer didn't like kind of wow me. You know, I still think the concept is genius.
Yeah, it's a trailer, man. I don't know. I have such a hard time judging films by trailers and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I sometimes I can't take, you know, new trailers serious at all.
What are you guys' thoughts on See No Evil 2? Now, I'm very curious about that one.
I have not seen the trailer.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are kind of disappointed with the trailer, but I
actually avoided it.
Yeah, I think the film is actually going to be pretty badass.
Well, I look at it is if it's even better or slightly better than See No Evil 1, then it's a success. I mean, it's been how long since the first one? Yeah, if they're able to even make it slightly better, I think that's against it. How often does that happen?
Just the lineup has to have some potential, you know. There's talent there.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the Soska sisters do something like this, it's like Ty West doing Cabin Fever 2. I'm very, very curious about this because
Ty West disowned Cabin Fever 2.
I understand that, but he still did it, and there's still a cut of his film out there he wants. Well, they cut his film to shit. I think if there was a Cabin Fever 2 director's cut come out, you know, sometime in the future or whatever, I think he would not disown the film like he did.
Yeah.
But I can't see the Soska sisters like making them being spotlighted in the mainstream like this. That's like if Ryan Nicholson comes and makes it.
How mainstream is it though?
It's pretty mainstream. WWE is promoted.
Well, anything
Raw and stuff, so it's kind of
associated with WWE is pretty damn mainstream.
Yeah,
I mean, don't they play trailers during
Raw.
Wrestling?
Yeah, but it is going direct to video, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their stuff.
The way I look at this film is that, you know, if it doesn't have any of the shoddy CGI that part one had in it, it's already a success in my eyes.
Mm.
I mean, I think that in my opinion, that was one of the things that really hurt that first film was there was some bad CGI in that film.
You know what? I think that this film is, I wouldn't expect American Mary out of it. I think it's just going to be a fun romp type slasher, that, you know, is like kind of more done in a more respectful way to slashers than the first See No Evil was. And, you know, because the Soska sisters get horror, you know, and I think they're going to do it a little bit better. It's pretty much probably going to be just the first See No Evil, but done better.
I think it's, I think it takes place in a hospital, I think, if I stand corrected,
I think it does.
Which already strikes my interest as it is.
Yeah,
but I'm curious to see how Kane, you know, comes back into the role because, you know, these are the only two movies he's ever been in. And, I don't know. I think he just needs to leave. I'm not even going to get into wrestling right now, but he's getting into a little bit of an old man. So I guess that's another reason why they make the film because, you know, you don't want him to get too old, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not expecting something great. I think people need to lower their expectations a bit, just a bit.
To be honest, I'm more intrigued that, you know, the Soska sisters are just, you know, just they're just putting something else out.
Yeah, but do you know what they're doing?
It's only their third film, so.
And that's the thing. Like I really enjoyed both their, you know, their first two films.
And you know what? Good for them. Good for them for getting a big, you know, big deal film with, you know, a big you know, studio WWE and stuff like that. That's awesome. You know, the Soska sisters are definitely, you know, making it in the game right now. And I like to see that. And, you know, I'm a little disappointed that they're going to be doing action films next though.
Why? Ty West is doing a Western.
That's awesome.
Yeah. A horror Western.
Well, his name's Ty West.
Guess that totally makes sense, awesome. Right? Yeah. That's exactly what we need more of. I mean, we've talked about this many times before is
Western
there needs to be
films.
More Western horror films.
Yeah.
I want to see a Western slasher. I mean, I think the majority of the Western horror films. Yeah, I think the majority of the Western horror films that I've seen have been kind of more on the supernatural, you know, side of things and whatnot. But
yeah,
I think a straight up bona fide slasher film, you know, with a guy with fucking spurs and cowboy boots on. That's pretty awesome. Riding on a horse.
Yeah, that's like the Ghost Town fucking cover. You know, he's wearing that.
Totally.
He's wearing adding cowboy boots and spurs and all that.
Yeah.
So next up is Hemlock Grove. This has Netflix, the Netflix series that I've still never seen, has has been greenlit for a third season, but it will end the series.
Three seasons, that's it?
Yeah, it's kind of...
I don't know. And that Hemlock Grove, that's the one that's coming out. Scream Factory is putting out the season one.
But is season two like on right now? I don't watch TV shows, so I have no fucking idea. But it's like season two going right now. Anybody?
No idea.
Yeah. I actually don't know much about. Season two is on Netflix right now.
Okay, I don't actually know a lot about the series, but it does intrigue me that they're putting it out. So,
you know, I've what looks like a badass mixed trailer, like the. The new season to American Horror Story seems fucking amazing.
Mm.
The trailer looks so good. I mean, the main character's a clown, so that's like already fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the fucking deal is with those American Horror Story seasons, but they are so overpriced. I mean, the second season is still going for like ridiculous amounts of money, and I'm like, aren't they doing season five right now?
Season five? Is they only on season four?
Yeah, it's season four.
Are they... They're just doing season four right now. Okay,
yeah, yeah. It's whatever. Not
I don't yet. Watch. I don't watch any of these shows like as they're broadcasting. But yeah, even season two is just like doesn't want to seem to go down in price, and I don't fucking get it.
Well, I think that based on everything that I've heard, I think we're kind of doing ourselves a little bit of like, you know, it's a little unjust that us three who are such big horror fans have still not gotten American Horror Story, because everybody that I talk to, everybody has told me that I would love it. And maybe not the first season, or maybe not the whatever, they one of the seasons, and you know, this next one looks pretty good. So I think all three of us need to, I think we all own the first season, right?
JP, can I just say something random quickly?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to love this, JP. So, in my first day of my women in horrors class, the teacher asked like what horror movie you watched first that, you know, stuck in your mind. And about 10 or 11 people said Child's Play 2. And I just fucking, it just made me laugh so hard because, you know, that movie changed a lot of people's lives. I think JP, you said that like, that was one of your memories too. The ending of Child's Play 2, right?
Oh yeah. Factory scene. I love that.
Yeah,
that's interesting too. Is a lot of people in your class around the same age as you?
Yeah, but it just made me laugh.
That's interesting.
Like they're like, oh, I watch it on HBO at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's how I remember it. And it's like, it's such a random movie for people to like remember, you know, Child's Play 2. But you know, yeah,
it's that factory scene, man. It's got to be that factory.
Yeah,
it's classic.
Sorry, random plot.
Yeah, so we all need to see American Horror Story, but Hemlock Grove is, from what I've heard, it's mixed to bad reviews, so that's not that great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sucks, man. I've been watching actually quite a bit of TV-related horror stuff. I recently picked up the 80s complete series of The Twilight Zone, so I've been kind of muscling through that.
Mood's Most Wanted TV show.
You know, it's interesting. I completely forgot how they had done that TV series back in the 80s. So every episode actually had like three parts. You know, they would do like their full length half an hour episodes. Then there'd be like an 8 minute kind of short. And then there'd be like another 20 minute, you know, episode. But it would be all considered episode one. So basically, I think when you're watching it back in the day when it was airing for like, a full hour kind of thing. It's pretty interesting when you watch it on the DVDs. But I got to say, though, man, holy fucking shit. Complete series was put out by CBC, the same people that put out the Monsters box set. And I was basically assuming that the box set was going to come exactly like the Monsters set, you know, in three keep cases with, you know, four or five discs apiece. No, this one came kind of like with a gatefold, and then the disc kind of, they slide out the side.
Oh.
And it's one of those, they're stacked, 13 discs stacked with that little fucking piece of cardboard to hold them in. I couldn't believe it when I opened it up. I actually was watching Terror for Tom's video, and I had to comment, and I was like, are you kidding me? That's how it's fucking packaged? I was so, so disappointed. But, you know, to be honest, it's about the content. So, you know, I've been enjoying it. But, yeah, just anyways.
I tried to find like a 13-disc flipper disc.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, fuck. It was just devastating when I opened it up. But
Shout Factories has, you know, those big flipper disc cases, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, but
But
it doesn't seem like the artwork is, You said it's like a box, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been actually picking up quite a bit. I picked up Bates Motel season one. Still haven't watched it, but I've been hearing good things.
I've seen those at Family Video. I haven't bought them yet.
Yeah, so. Got too many series to get to. I seen Hannibal was selling for like $10 for the first season. I was like, holy fuck, that's cheap.
I've heard amazing things about Hannibal.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I might just grab it just because. And I mean, I'll eventually get to it down the line. I got way too many things to watch, but along with the season 4 of Walking Dead, I haven't even seen it yet. So,
well, I'm still on season 2 of that. So,
and season 5 is coming back a few weeks.
Yeah.
So is that it on Hemlock Grove?
Yeah.
Hemlock Grove, yeah. Yeah.
All right. After that, Joe Dante has went and said that, I mean, this has been talked about for a long time, but the Gremlins reboot is moving forward again, I guess.
I thought I read that he said he's going to have nothing to do with it.
He did say that, but he said Warner Brothers and Amblin are the ones doing it, and that they have some big name people attached to it with some good concepts and good ideas that they've, you know, created over time, and they haven't really went after it until like now. So I guess they're actually moving forward with it. I mean, I think we all know the thing with this is CGI. Like, everybody's worried about the CGI, which, you know, it should be.
Ugh.
There's fucking CGI Gremlins. I'm probably gonna fucking jump off a bridge. That's like the charm of the original film. They're just gonna fuck it up with CGI looking things.
Completely, man. You can't CGI the Gremlins. It makes no sense. It's just really gonna kill it. I mean, at least for the older, you know, the people that have seen the original Gremlins. Maybe not for the new people.
But the film is, you know, relatively popular in the mainstream community, so I would assume a lot of people have seen it. So
totally. Yeah. I'm more referring to maybe the younger crowd that it might be even appealing to. I'm assuming it's going to be a PG film, so I don't think they're going to go too extreme with it. But I think that's the last thing that all of us fans want to see is CGI Gremlins. Come on.
PG, huh? That'd be interesting if it's PG.
You don't think it's going to be?
I think it'd be PG-13. Isn't Gremlins 2 PG-13?
They're both PG-13. They're PG, one of them.
Yeah.
I think the original one is I don't actually remember, to be honest. But
yeah,
you could be right about part 2. Part 2 might be PG-13.
Yeah. Because, like, I think Poltergeist 2 and 3 are PG-13. Or Poltergeist 3 is PG-13 and 1 and 2 are PG.
Are you saying Poltergeist?
Isn't that what it is? Poltergeist?
Poltergeist?
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist?
Poltergeist. Now you're making me say fucking trauma movie titles. Fuck you, JP.
I do that actually
quite
a bit.
That's what it sounds like you're saying.
I'll say Poltergeist sometimes when I'm actually referring to Poltergeist. Fucking bad. It's awesome. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that's going to be very appealing to anybody. I don't think that's going to do well. I mean, you know, with the people, but I don't know. What are your thoughts, JP?
I just think that it's going to have CGI in it, and it might be interesting. Maybe they've thought of some new ideas with the Gremlins, but no matter what, I think that it will be successful because it probably will be PG-13 and it probably will get asses in seats, kids in theaters.
Well, what I meant by, you know, not being successful is I meant just with the fans. I mean, I think financially it might do fine, but
I think it'll do great, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a real mixed bag. People are going to be like just completely against that.
Yeah, CGI us. Bullshit.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, so The Walking Dead is doing a like spinoff, or like I guess they're calling it a companion series, which I guess it's supposed to be set in the same world, but it's just a different group of people, but it's during the same events.
Hmm. All right. I haven't watched The Walking Dead.
That took me a second to process that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do here is maybe get another like group of characters going or something, so that like they can go away from what they have. I don't know what they're trying to do, or they're just trying to cash in and have double the Walking Dead. Exactly. Walking Dead all year long.
Well, that's exactly what it sounds like, to be honest, man. I mean, you're just doing the same show with a different set of characters, like in a different area. So theoretically, that's exactly what they're doing, but I don't know. I don't know if I dig that idea. I mean, why not just keep the what you got? Do we need double the dose? Maybe some people disagree. Maybe they want that, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
I think it could be interesting if you start doing crossovers and stuff too, like well, characters crossover in the show. Like that could be something.
That's exactly what I was starting to think of too. Exactly. So if these characters start, you know, obviously blending in with the other show, that would be intriguing. That would be quite interesting.
Yeah, maybe set it in somewhere drastically different than where are they at, like Georgia or something.
Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe set it somewhere like
you have a crossover character, you know, they get, you know, separated from their group or whatever, and they end up in the other show, and they end up getting killed by, you know, our Walking Dead, right? And then all of a sudden, next week, you're watching this, and I don't know, that's actually kind of intriguing a little bit, you know?
It could be the future. This could be the start of something.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. That's about as far as it goes for me, though, because I'm still, you know, seasons behind the original Walking Dead, so
yeah,
I do not need another Walking Dead to catch up on.
Yeah.
And then, actually, the last little piece of news here, that I think this is the last piece. There was a trailer released for a film called Carver, and this kind of took, you know, the internet, the horror community by storm a little bit. It was directed by a 13-year-old girl, through a Kickstarter. It was a successful Kickstarter, and I watched the trailer, and you know, it looks like a low budget, kind of throwbacky slasher.
But what about that zombie film that came out a few years ago that was directed by that girl too?
Yeah, but I heard that was actually I don't know. I don't know much about it, so I'm not even going to comment on that.
Yeah.
But this, if I seen this trailer not knowing that it was directed by a 13-year-old little girl, I would probably be like, it doesn't really look that good. It's kind of cheesy looking. But, you know, I still think it would be kind of cool because, like, it's set on Halloween. I like stuff like that. But, I mean, I think you got to give it props, dude, because it actually looks like something, which, like, I didn't – like, being 13 years old, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, salute to her.
Yeah, totally. 100% agree. I haven't seen the trailer. But I've seen the poster art for it, and it's fucking badass. Have you guys seen the poster art for it?
I don't think I have.
Oh, it's fucking badass, man. It looks awesome. I thought it was totally cool. And then I read it was like, yeah, directed by a 13 or 14-year-old girl or something like that. Which, and I was like, holy fuck, awesome.
You know they're going to ride that clear to the bank. But I'm fine with that because that's what you should.
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with them, you know, marketing the film like that at all. You know, it doesn't hurt at all. So... And, you know, to be honest, I'm intrigued enough by a 13-year-old female directing a film like that. I mean, that's something I would want to check out because I think that's, you know, us being hardcore fans, why not check that out? Why not see what that generation is doing? That's fucking cool, man.
And to comment on what Jeremy said about the girl who made the zombie movie, from what I understand, the documentary about the little girl making the zombie movie was much better than the actual product. This actually looks like something that would come out from a regular guy who made a low budget, you know, probably crappy slasher.
I
want to
know how much help she got making it, though.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know if she really directed the whole thing. Or, like, no. If she had anybody helping her, you know, because those cameras,
I'm sure there was help and stuff like that. But I would be interested to know how much of the creative decision making was her.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something to look forward to. I'll definitely see it when it comes out.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. And speaking of young female filmmakers, I don't know, you guys are familiar with Horseball's channel?
Yep.
Actually, he's one of my probably one of my top favorite YouTubers. Actually, I love his channel.
Oh, that
amazing
hurts.
Edited videos. Well, he does. I just love the way he structures his videos. He's got a lot of cool elements. And
oh, that hurts more.
Because you know JP Moods absolutely loves your channel. You know, he just sits there just, oh, JP, I love your videos.
No, I think Tom's a really cool guy. But anyways, on that note, oh,
that hurts
trying to make
even
here
more and more.
Is his daughter.
Awesome, man.
His daughter, you know, has a full-length film out too. And I'm not sure how old she is. I think she's about 16 or 17 years old. And she's got a film called Zombie Kids. It's called Zombie Kids. And it actually premiered at some film festivals and whatnot. There's pressed up copies and whatnot. And very, very fucking cool. And I believe that she's around 16 when she did it.
I remember his daughter, like, in his early videos, like, mm-hmm. I think we call her, like, Little Headbanger or something.
Yeah, it's a Little Headbanger. And actually, Tom, he's actually sending me a copy.
That's cool.
To do a review of and stuff. So I'm really excited to see it. And I've heard nothing but positive things for it and stuff. The one condition was he wants you to give an honest opinion, like an honest review, which I always do.
That I really respect that. I really do respect that.
Yeah. So, I will.
Cause you gotta be honest then.
I will. I'll totally be honest with it. But I'm really intrigued because once again, it's a young female, film director. And I think that's just totally awesome. Totally cool. So
I wonder what she shot on. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, I thought I'd throw that in there considering it was relevant.
That's something I didn't know. So thanks for that. And that kind of wraps it up for news. But do you guys remember anything that happened over the summer that you thought was significant in any way in terms of news?
Man, I am not gonna lie. When you read the news off during these casts, I'm hearing it for the first time. I try to avoid like everything. I'm weird like that. I like to be surprised. I really do stay off the news sites and stuff. I know you're frequent on those ones, but I don't know, man. Except for like the major announcements and stuff that get posted on Facebook and whatnot, that's pretty much all I have. I know there was lots of really cool titles that were announced that aren't even out yet, so that would take all fucking day to name those off. The one title that I was really intrigued by that was announced this summer by Scorpion was To All a Good Night.
Yeah.
The 1980. Yeah. Directed by David Hess.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah.
so damn fucking cool that's getting
cool.
An awesome release by an awesome company. So that was one release that really intrigued me this summer, but there's just so many to mention.
Yeah, Scream Factory announced a bunch of stuff, stuff that some people were a little less happy with than others.
I'm not going to lie. I was a little underwhelmed by, you know, for them to do a 10-film announcement
at Comic-Con.
Yeah, but you weren't going to get 10 ball-busting films, though.
No. I wasn't expecting to be blown away by all 10.
And he's not even saying they're not good films.
No. All the films are, you know, they're pretty decent announcements.
I was pumped for Monkey Shines.
I was a little pissed off with the fact that, like, every one of those films, I think, with the exception of one, is just an upgrade for me. And a couple of those films, I don't really need to upgrade and stuff. But I think Scarecrows was really damn cool. But the one thing that I was a little intrigued by was the fact
Scarecrows got announced.
Yeah, but one of the things that intrigued me about the announcement was the lack of special editions. I think maybe Scarecrows, possibly they could have done a little more with that. I mean, it's not even I shouldn't even be judging it, but I'm just saying there was only a special edition for Mad Max, which is an interesting title for Scream Factory to be releasing. What's your guys' thoughts on that? Should it be released by Scream Factory or Shout Factory? Like, does it really fit the Scream Factory line?
Honestly, my thing with Mad Max is I've never seen the first one because I just never could get into it. I've just always liked the two sequels, but I honestly do think like post-apocalyptic like does belong on like the Scream label, but I don't know about the original Mad. I would consider putting the Road Warrior on the Scream label. I know it's not directly horror, but I think that it's close enough to the genre to where it fits. And the reason probably that this is stemming from is because I watched Monster Vision with Joe Bob growing up, and Mad Max always appeared on Monster Vision. So it was right there with the horror films.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, out of the 10 titles, like, what exactly were you most, you know, excited for?
I was
Monkey Shines.
I was pretty excited for Monkey Shines. Scarecrows, of course.
I didn't know about Scarecrows until now. I'm pretty hyped on that.
Yeah, I'm starting to forget the 10 of them.
Dolls, Candyman 2.
I was a little distracted by the Candyman 2 one. I'm not really that excited for that one.
Okay, so I know the special editions that were announced were Mad Max and Escape from New York.
Yeah, that's right.
Escape from New York, again, being on the same kind of level as Mad Max, like a post-apocalyptic
Yeah, but it's Carpenter. Film.
Exactly. So I have no problem with that. I love Escape from New York. It's a great fucking film. I was a little bummed out the Scarecrows wasn't special. I wanted, you know,
that was my that was my main beef with it, was the films that they announced that I kind of wanted to be collector's editions aren't. Like, mm-hmm. I would have loved to see a new cover art for especially Scarecrows. That's what I'm right with you on that one. But there was a Tobey Hooper film announced and a Stephen King film. I thought that was cool because I think they did need a Stephen King film. And I was a little weirded out that the Tobey Hooper film wasn't collector's edition.
I actually called Invaders from Mars too. Maybe not so much in that, you know, that 10 film announcement, but I figured that was eventually going to get announced.
I guess that makes my DVD to you less nice.
No. That was amazing. throw in that one time, but I there was something about Invaders from Mars I knew was gonna you know happen, but I gotta say, man, Candyman 2, a little interesting, again releasing
so random
original. I know, I'm not really too sure why they're trying to, you know, push Universal those, but
owns the first one.
But my favorite announcement, of course, you guys probably already know, is Dolls.
Yeah.
I fucking love Dolls. It's an amazing film. You guys see me wear my shirt all the time. I love Dolls. So that was one that I was really, really stoked about. New Year's Evil, I thought, was a surprising announcement.
I think that one was the one that I was most excited about simply because it's another slasher that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And it's a holiday slasher, technically, so.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your thoughts, actually, after you watch that film. The Dark Half was the Stephen King film.
That's right.
The Dark Half, I like that film. I prefer the book to the movie, to be honest, but it's still a fun film. I don't know what else. What else was announced? I think that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. I think so.
Phantom of the Opera, the 1988.
Oh, yeah. That's actually version. A pretty solid movie with Robert Englund. That's the only one you didn't have, correct?
Yeah. So that is, yeah. So I'm actually looking forward to, you know, picking that up. It's not an upgrade for me, but I have to say my least favorite one out of the bunch has to be Candyman 2, just because it's going to be so obscure, you know, as
it goes out of print.
It's just going to make me want Candyman 1 released by Scream.
Yeah. My only way to get that movie on Blu-ray is fucking importing it. So, and it's, I think, because Candyman 2 is owned by MGM and Candyman 1's owned by Universal, so I think that's why.
Yeah, that's exactly why. But yeah. Scream Factory also announced the full, you know, specs on the Nightbreed Blu-ray limited set, and that was actually surprisingly controversial when they did that. I was really surprised. I made an entire video on it. But your quick thoughts on that whole thing?
I wish they threw the Cabal cut on there, to be completely honest, on like the bonus disc of the special edition set, but you know, anything looks better than what I saw 2 years ago, so I'm just happy seeing
it. Wait, I didn't understand what you just said.
Okay, this movie is not the Cabal cut.
Yeah, because this the Cabal cut is everything.
Yes.
It's just like all the footage they found, but they did add in the special features of the third disc all kind of like unused footage.
I don't know.
I don't know why everybody was kind of like bummed out that it wasn't the Cabal cut, because from what I understand, but that's what it, the Cabal cut was known as, the Cabal, like, was known as like the better cut at the time, but really it was just all the footage. And from what I understand, I've never seen either cut, but it's pretty unwatchable from what I understand, because it's just super duper long.
It's not because it's super duper long. It looks like garbage.
But wouldn't you rather have the director's cut than
I have
cut?
I have to see it, you know.
It's probably a slimmed down version of the Cabal cut. That's Cabal probably cut exactly what like, it is. It was almost 3 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was close
so
to 3 hours.
So how long is the director's cut? Does anybody actually know?
I think it's like 125 or something.
I think they said
pretty good.
They said in the announcement, I think it was like 40 minutes of different footage than the original theatrical release, but I think it was like only 20 minutes longer or something like that.
Oh yeah, okay. My thoughts on the Nightbreed release. I have no problem with them, you know, releasing a limited edition, you know, with the that includes the director's cut plus the R-rated theatrical version. And I believe, is that a Blu-ray too?
I'm pretty sure it's a Blu-ray version of the theatrical cut.
Okay. Oh. And then plus that edition has the extras, right?
Yeah.
That aren't on the standard edition. So the standard edition just comes with the director's cut of Nightbreed, and basically that's it.
No. There's extras.
Okay. Are all the extras being included on the standard that are included in the limited, or is it just some of them?
Just some of them.
I think what it is on the... All right.
So fucking confusing.
It is confusing.
So the way I thought of it, I thought there was some special features on the standard edition, but not all of them. That's the way I
kind of
took it.
It kind of is like that, but I think the limited edition has like extra footage, but I think they share like the same features, like featurettes and commentaries and stuff like that. But I think the main bonus in the limited edition in terms of like content, like extra content is like extra scenes and stuff like that. I think that's mainly what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I have no problem with, you know, Screen Factory releasing a limited edition to 10,000, I think it is, or something like that. Of the directors of the limited edition. You know, it's fine. But I think the price is so outrageous. Like, I can't
that was
justify.
The issue.
You know, the price just seems insane to me, because if you're going to buy the regular edition, you know, just the standard director's cut with some extras, you know, it's a normal $20, right? Yeah. It's your normal $20. It's fine. But, you know, to get the one extra Blu-ray with the R-rated and some extra extras, you know, and you're going to bump up the price $60. I think that's just actually insane,
yeah.
And kind of I can't justify it at all, you know. And it's such a shame too, because I would love to have that edition, but I'm not fucking paying $80. I mean,
yeah. I would.
I mean,
not
come
pay
on,
that
I'm just ever. Not paying $80. There's no way.
No, that's outrageous.
It is outrageous. Yeah. I, for myself, I don't understand how. I mean, I understand there's 10,000, but like eight, they couldn't have the price a little lower.
Well, I think it's insane, though. Because they obviously sold, so they were kind of they estimated the right amount that people were going to pay for it.
I guess, but I mean, that's hardcore, man. That's fucking unbelievable. I mean, the way I look at it right now, you know, this edition, the limited edition Nightbreed, is $80. You know, I mean, I just went out and picked up the Possession, you know, special edition limited for a little bit less. You know, I think it was $64. For it, but man, that edition, dude, is on a different fucking playing field than this one.
Okay,
it doesn't even compare. You have to see how big this fucking thing is, how much is involved, the booklets, the there's sound. It's crazy. I mean, I haven't seen this, you know, up and close and personal, but I don't think it's going to be comparing to that Possession edition. That's actually cheaper.
Yeah, I know you love that edition more than anything.
Oh man, I'm actually just blown away by it. I can't believe that much effort was put into an edition. It's really, really unbelievable. Yeah. But my point is that it's actually cheaper than this edition.
Yeah,
itself.
But it's just like going to be like a bigger case, like a little thicker case with a slip cover.
Yeah,
and
I think that's pretty much exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, what you're paying for mostly is the theatrical. Cut of the film, which it does say new transfer, but I don't know if it says, it doesn't say anything about like if it's Blu-ray or not, but it does say new transfer.
If it's on a DVD,
I was led to believe
shit.
I was led to believe that the R-rated, like the theatrical cut, wasn't a Blu-ray. Yeah, so it's, I think it's a DVD.
That was, bummed me out a bit.
I know. And then that actually kind of, you know, stresses the point even more about
just spread your butt cheeks even more.
Yeah. It's like, holy shit, dude, that's a fucking DVD. So, but I don't know, man. I think this is, it's tough to swallow.
Just really quickly to get back to like the special features, just so we could kind of cover that. They do seem to have like the majority of like the new like features, like the director's cut presentation and introduction and audio commentary, some featurettes, like that, all that stuff is on both, editions.
Okay.
The bonus disc in this, the bonus disc features in the limited edition is like deleted and alternate scenes, which is 20 minutes. Some like prosthetic classes, like stuff like that. That they probably, you know, show some of the creatures or whatever. Like a few interviews, like makeup tests. It's like very minor stuff, like stop motion, lost footage, extended torture scene. It's mainly to do with like scenes and stuff, probably very raw. So not too great. Anyway, I think we all kind of agree it's overpriced. None of us would really pay for it, and but it sold, and we have no problem with Scream Factory offering a higher product, you know, for more money.
Yeah, like I said, that's fine. I mean, if you're willing to pay the money, you know, all props to the people that bought, you know, the $80 version. That's cool.
Premium was the word I was looking for. A premium
product. Premium. Yeah. Premium product. That's a good word. I like that. That's nice. So, but yeah, I don't know.
Well,
I think
we
that's
got
it
our
from
Scream Factory talk-in for this episode.
Scream Factory is actually, well, since those announcements at Comic-Con, which were, what, about a month ago?
Yeah.
About a month and a half ago. They've been very, very quiet. They haven't really done anything because, from what I've read, I don't think people were overly that impressed with this 10 film announcement. I think a lot of people were disappointed. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to complain. Like I said, there's films in there that I'm looking forward to, but I think it just didn't meet people's expectations. You know, you hear 10 film announcement, you know, you're expecting fucking every, you know, 80s unreleased gem in there and stuff, but.
Yeah, and then a couple weeks later, they also had to pull back on one of their films that they was going to release because of some rights issues or whatever. I forget. No, the transfer. They couldn't find a good negative or whatever to do the transfer. What film was that, actually? Do you remember?
That was Hell. Oh, what the fuck was
Hell
it called?
Hellhole.
Hellhole. Yeah. I kept wanting to say Hellgate for some reason. Yeah, Hellhole. And which was really – it really bummed me out because that was one of the titles I was really looking forward to because I'd never seen it. It was an 80s unreleased film kind of thing, and it's really such a shame that that's not getting released. But, you know, they did apologize.
I kind of can sympathize with them a bit because there's so much pressure to make announcements. Everybody's like, why haven't you made an announcement? Why haven't you made an announcement? When are you going to announce something? So I kind of understand it a bit.
Yeah, but to be honest, when they released – or when they announced that film, they had announced a bunch of other things around that time too. It wasn't just like, you know, this was announcement and, you know, yeah, the first announcement in like a month or two or something. It was in the middle of some things. It was announced months ago, right? I believe that was around the time they announced Lake Placid. Oddly enough.
The worst Scream Factory release next to Scanners 2 and 3 in Mood's opinion.
Yeah. But, you know, it was definitely a blip, but yeah, they've gone very silent.
Mm-hmm. They do have a big co-release coming out next month or this month. Wow, this month, huh? With the Halloween box set. Was we doing the show when that was announced? Yeah, I think it was right at the end.
Yeah. So, I mean, the recent releases since we haven't been doing the show. When did we stop?
We missed the whole summer of Fear, pretty much.
So it was like – it was June, July, and August, right?
Yeah. We did the show like the last day of May, last week of May.
Well, the thing is we had – no, because we talked about Ravenous and the Monkey's Paw. Was the Final Terror wasn't out yet, was it?
The Monkey's Paw was like right at the end, I think.
Okay. So the Final Terror was released in July, Lake Placid, Deadly Eyes, Ginger Snaps, Phantom of the Paradise, Without Warning, Motel Hell, Leviathan.
No, we caught the very beginning of the Summer of Fear because we did Sleepaway Camp, and that I think that kicked off the Summer of Fear, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just recently, The Legend of Hell House was released.
And my most anticipated release is coming out this week, I think.
Which we will get to in a minute here.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. So, yeah. So there wasn't actually a whole lot, you know, Scream Factory releases actually released since we have been on our summer vacation. But
my most hype release doesn't come out until the second week of October. I think Moots all knows what that is.
Yep.
Yep.
I don't. What is it?
Moods, do you want to do the honors?
Did you say in October?
Second week of October. It's a TV show.
The Hemlock Grove? No, I'm just joking.
Moods knows.
The Pee Wee box set?
Yes. Oh my god. Next. Let's move on.
Okay. JP, so butthurt. That's probably gonna do it for the news, so.
Yes.
So anyways, let's get into the first edition of season 2 of Mood Swings. So upcoming releases, which this is why I put a halt on that conversation there. So new releases for September 9th, and this is just some of them. We were talking about this earlier. We need a better, you know, a site where they you know, they announce everything. They have the list of everything that's coming out. It's hard to find though. But September 9th, this Tuesday, Scream Factory is proud to release Pumpkinhead on Blu-ray.
Oh yeah. I know Dustin was talking about it, so.
Yeah, I think this release is going to do very, very well in sales. I think a lot of people are really excited for it.
Did you see that cover art, baby?
Oh, yeah, it's fucking fantastic. Mine's in the mail right now. It's been shipped.
I'm getting that poster. I got to order mine from Shout Factory like right after this podcast because I need that poster. I cannot miss that poster.
It's great art. It's great art. And a very interesting double feature here of All Hallows Eve and Mischief Night is being released this Tuesday. So I know Jeremy really likes All Hallows Eve.
And David Kaye loves the movie just as much as I do. So
yeah, I still have not seen either one of those films, which is quite interesting.
All Hallows Eve is fucking fantastic. I think that set up Moods.
Yeah, I think I might actually. Other notable releases this Tuesday, Synapse is proud to release the fucking Prom Night Blu-ray. Now, I know Prom Night isn't everyone's favorite slasher film. A lot of people actually dislike
it. Which is weird because it used to be. It used to be on like every top 10 list ever when I first started like paying attention to like the horror community.
You know, to be honest, I think it's, you know, it was one of those films that was on everyone's list because maybe they hadn't seen a lot of the other slasher films from that era. And, you know, once they saw them, they kind of realized that Prom Night was actually not that good. That's the way I kind of interpreted that. Because we talked about this before, didn't we?
That was on my, like, top 10 overrated list
at
one point.
Yeah. Prom Night really isn't that great of a film, to be honest. But I am excited because Synapse is releasing it. And I'm really curious to check out the transfer because I remember Prom Night being such a dark film, hard to see, you know, in all the editions I've seen on DVD. So I'm really curious to see what they did with the transfer. Any thoughts on it?
I've never actually seen that movie.
Really?
You know?
I probably actually won't pick this up.
I'm grabbing it because I every Synapse Blu-ray that comes out, I grab. They're like my favorite besides.
I can't even do that. If I have to like commit to picking up all of something again, I will have no money.
Well, the thing with Synapse is that they release like a Blu-ray every fucking 5 or 6 months, with the exception of Curtains that just came out. But they don't release very much stuff because they really, really put a lot of effort into their shit. So, you know, these things get bumped and whatnot, which I respect. You know, at least they put the full effort into these. But, you know,
I actually don't think I own a Synapse Blu-ray, so I wouldn't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some. I really highly recommend like Street Trash. It's fucking phenomenal.
But anyways, that's the one that I want to. That's the one that's been on my list forever.
Mm. Another notable release, which I heard the transfer is fucking beautiful on this. And I keep hearing. I think I have a couple Blu-rays released by this company, but everything they seem to put out is just amazing. And that's Graduation Day from Vinegar Syndrome. Mm. You know, they're basically snatching up a lot of these older Troma releases and doing them the justice that they need. I've heard that the transfer on Graduation Day is just to fucking die for. So that's intriguing. But big props to Vinegar Syndrome with just, you know, they're not just picking up the Troma titles, but they're, everything that they're releasing is just, you know, really crisp looking. So
has all of Films done anything recently?
Because
they were putting out some good stuff for a little while.
They need to pick.
No, they haven't really put out a lot of, you know, notable horror Blu-rays. Someone, stuff, maybe non-horror, but
someone needs to pick up Screenplay and release it on Blu-ray. Like, a movie that serves it. That's one of my favorite Troma movies.
Yeah, that's an interesting film.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Graduation Day.
Just totally influenced by Ed Wood, but.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
This next release is one that I'm really looking forward to. It's directed by Bob Goldthwait. This is like his first like full-fledged horror film. Willow Creek.
Yeah.
That's an easy edit. So right after I say Willow Creek, I edit that out.
Wait, I gotta compose myself. That was fucking, it's so random.
I told that you that phone was gonna be loud as fuck if it rang. It
scared the shit out of me.
So JP,
that scared the shit out of me, dude. Yeah, I got it. 109.
So I literally said Willow Creek, and then the phone rang.
Yeah. So just say Willow Creek again.
Okay. Yeah, Willow Creek. So, this is one I've been really intrigued by because I heard that the shoot for this film was done, you know, within under a week or something like that. I don't know. I think it looks pretty cool. You guys have any thoughts? You guys intrigued by this one?
No. I'll check it out. The cover.
Come on. I think it sounds actually pretty cool. What else is coming out? There's a bunch of like random stuff. The Hunted. That's a very original title. Project Purgatory.
Oof. What the fuck is that?
I have no fucking idea.
Sounds like a midnight release type of movie.
I know. Another title that just does not interest me at all is Shame the Devil. I'm assuming this is another fucking, you know, possession type film. I don't know. I don't really know much, but seriously, those films are just a dime a dozen. I think this is a pretty interesting release. I'm not sure. I think E1 maybe is releasing this. It's an Elvira movie macabre.
Well, they haven't done one of those in a while.
They're still doing those?
No, it's a coffin tin set, and it's got like 13 discs in it. It comes in a coffin tin set, and it has like 30 fucking movies in there. Hmm. So that's pretty interesting. The price is outrageous. I think it's around like $89, so I don't think any of us will be picking it up. Too rich for my fucking
$88.50 too much for me.
Yeah, it's just I was intrigued by this release. Was Jennifer's Body released on Blu-ray before?
Yeah, I have it.
Buy Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
How the fuck you had that movie, JP?
There's another release.
I like that movie.
Coming out this Tuesday on Blu-ray, and I was intrigued by that. I was like, I thought that movie was released before.
I think the dialogue is absolutely some of the worst dialogue in ever. I don't get it. It's way too unrealistic.
Oh man!
But
oh man! Seriously,
I think it's kind of fun.
No, I think the overall product isn't that bad. But yeah, I kind of agree with the dialogue, dude.
It's really annoying. Nobody talks like that.
Dude, I know, man. I talked about this in a video recently about how when you're watching a film, no matter how bad it is, if the dialogue is just pure shit and doesn't make any sense, and it really ruins it, doesn't it?
Yeah, because people don't talk like that.
I know. If people don't talk like that, it's just, no, whatever. But anyways, for the last one that's listed on here is Killer Mermaid. I can honestly say, I know there's another film that Danny always
Killer Mermaid?
It's called She Creature, and it's apparently like a mermaid film.
I thought the movie was named Killer Mermaid.
There is a movie called Killer Mermaid that's coming out this year, I think.
This one's coming out Tuesday called Killer Mermaid.
Oh my God.
Now, what I was saying is that I've always wanted to see like a Killer Mermaid film, and there is one that's notable. It's called She Creature, apparently.
There's a few out there.
I've never seen any of them, so this kind of caught my eye. I was like, Killer Mermaid? Fucking awesome. I know Dave is just cursing the fucking, you know, the audio right now, but
yeah, I don't know.
I would
check it out. You know, if it's $10 or something, I'd pick it up just based off of the fact that there's not many Killer Mermaid films.
Exactly my point. So yeah, that's gonna do it for the releases. Do you guys know of any other releases that are coming out that you can think of that weren't mentioned there?
No, not any that's coming out next week.
Next week? Oh, I don't know anything next week.
This Tuesday? Yeah. So the following week, there's lots of releases coming out. So, but yeah, I guess that'll do it for the upcoming releases. I wanted to give a big shout out to a company. I don't believe I have actually ever given these guys a shout out before. But I'm going to do it because I think they need to be, you know, recognized. And it's a Canadian company called Black Fawn Distribution. They're relatively new. They only have – well, they're just releasing their sixth title right now.
Is it the Disco Path company?
Yeah, they released Disco Path. That's one of the very first release.
They're releasing some films down here on the Level 33 label, The Legend of the Psychotic Forest Ranger.
So it's kind of like that backwards thing with IFC being released on, you know, Mongrel and MO Pictures up in Canada. I don't know. It's weird. But I remember reviewing The Legend of the Psychotic Forest Ranger and, you know, from this company, Black Fawn, way back on Body Bags, and going, holy fuck, man, this movie's terrible. But, you know, ever since then, you know, I've really gained the respect. They released a movie called Devil's Night, which has Daniel Harris in it. And it's pretty much a fucking Halloween ripoff, but it's pretty fun, though. It's actually kind of fun. So another notable film called If a Tree Falls. It's basically kind of like, you know, a group of kids go out to the, you know, they're in the woods camping and whatnot, and a bunch of psychotic motherfuckers take them hostage and they
fuck. I'm sorry, that's a really shitty title.
If a tree falls.
I like it.
Really?
Well, it makes sense to the film, though, because they're in the woods and, if they're screaming at people. Yeah, it does make sense to the plot of the film, but it was intriguing. I really enjoyed it.
Jeremy, I just think that went over your head.
Fuck you, JP.
now I think this one right here, JP might be intrigued by. They released a film called In the House of Flies. And the reason why I say that is because it's one of those films that take place. It's like this couple gets drugged at this drive-in and they get abducted.
Oh, that sounds badass already.
They wake up in this hole. They're in this fucking room. It's kind of like underground, though. And this dude, and there's a phone in the middle of the room. And the dude keeps phoning him up and fucking with him. He's telling him all pile of shit. And then he's making him do shit. And they have to do shit to open up these suitcases and stuff like that. So it's one of those films that takes place all in one,
I'm going to order this now.
Which is
we have now contained
horror.
We've talked about this.
So this can fall into that contained horror category. It's called In the House of Flies. Very cool film.
We're creating a subgenre, by the way. It's
Yeah,
we officially named those films contained horror.
That sounds fucking awesome.
So anyways, I really enjoyed it. And of course, Jeremy mentioned Disco Path, which is about a guy that fucking goes crazy when he hears disco music and he starts killing motherfuckers. It's as simple as that, but it's actually quite entertaining.
I could hang out with that dude for my whole life and he would never start killing motherfuckers.
And they just released a brand new film, which I don't have yet. I do have it coming to me, and it is called Silent Retreat. I don't know anything about it, but people, just check out this label, you know, support these guys.
What's the name of the label?
Black Fawn Distribution.
Are they
the beauty of these guys is that they don't charge for shipping, so if you know you hit the buy now and they just no charge on shipping, which is fucking nice.
Are they DVD only or Blu-ray and DVD?
Everything is DVD so far. They do have combo packs where you can get like all, you know, three films for like a certain price and whatnot, which is actually really the way to go if you don't
have
anything.
How is the pricing?
$15 DVD.
Yeah, it seems pretty standard. Like you can get, like they have a Volume 1 collection which has Devil's Night, If a Tree Falls, and The Legend of the Psychotic Forest Ranger. All three films, and it's like $30. So $10 a film, free shipping. So
I can get down with that.
So that's not bad. That's not bad. But I really like what these guys are doing. I received a package from them. I'd bought a couple movies off them. I think they must have took a note that I bought all the releases or something because they sent me a signed post, signed Disco Path poster. That's cool. Yeah, just for free, and it wasn't part of the deal. So I was like, that's fucking awesome.
That's how you can like appreciate like a company, because they had noticed you did that, and then they just wanted to, you know, not even say like, hey, we're gonna send you this, like, you know, just do it out of the coolness of their heart. kindness.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's why I wanted to give him a shout out and stuff. But, Black Fawn Distribution, check them out. Very cool films, all kind of different and whatnot. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, JP, did you have something?
Yeah, I have a little quick shout out to one of the sites that I frequent, the horror sites, is Shock to You Drop. It's probably my favorite because it's not as, I don't know, like commercial as Bloody Disgusting, which is seems to be like the most popular site. And I like the stuff that the owner, Ryan Tarek, does. It's shocktodrop.com. They posted a 2014 Halloween horror movie guide. It's pretty much like 42 films that are coming out in the next couple months. And I thought it was pretty cool. It's a quick little thumbnail thing. You can just go through and see what all is coming out. A little description on each film and cool way to see what's coming out, you know. So check that out on shocktodrop.com.
All right, so next up, we are going to get into this quite popular topic of Rob Zombie.
Yeah,
I guess so. You know, Rob Zombie's crowdfunding for 31. I guess this has been going – I guess it was really popular a couple weeks ago, but our epic return to the cast airways didn't happen till now. But here's our thoughts on it, JP.
Yeah, so – first of all, a little brief backstory. 31 is Rob Zombie's new film that he's going to be making. I believe it's set on Halloween, and it has something. I don't even know what it really has, like what it's about, but there's a lot of cool concept art. And knowing Rob Zombie, it looks pretty interesting. Now, he decided to go and do a crowdfunding through the crowdfunding route for this. Not through Kickstarter, not through Indiegogo. But I don't know if it's on his personal site, but it seemed very, it didn't seem like it was a site that does the crowdfunding thing. I could be wrong. I don't know. It really doesn't matter. But people were kind of pissed off that Rob's, it was funny because like, I almost feel like, Rob, why do you do this to yourself? You do the stuff that, like, you know everybody's going to, like, hate you for sometimes.
Yeah. Because he got so much shit on Facebook, it wasn't even funny.
Because Rob Zombie has some of the biggest haters out there, you know? Like Rob Zombie haters, like, hate his guts, and they're everywhere. Like, I could just look at that idea and be like, I don't know if you want to do that one. You're going to get a huge backlash from this. But I was just curious, like, okay, crowdfunding, what are your thoughts on that? And then what are your thoughts on Rob Zombie using it?
All right, crowdfunding. I was okay with it in the beginning, you know, a few years ago, things like that, when it first got it started. But now it kind of just exploded and everyone thinks they're I don't know, entitled. I mean, they are entitled, but everyone, you know, puts up Indiegogo and
it's oversaturated.
It is extremely oversaturated. Like, why can't you just go back to the old days where you find people to help fund your movie? You know, you do shit like they used to be. Like, one
I'll
of my
tell
profes-
you why because wait, these it, are the new days.
I understand that, but one of my professors, made a movie. Is making a movie, and he refused to go on Kickstarter and Indiegogo to fund his movie. So he made a website. He put a PayPal button on there. And he promoted the shit out of his movie, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and things like that, which is still using new technology and shit like that. And he was able to fund his movie that way. And, you know, PayPal took, you know, the 3% that they do, but he didn't lose the rest of the percentage that Indiegogo and Kickstarter takes, which I think is like 8%, if I'm staying corrected from what I've read. But even listening to people in my class, you know, talking about, oh, I'm going on Kickstarter to help fund my movie. I go, are you really think you're going to raise money on Kickstarter to help fund your movie? Do you think like anybody really, really gives a shit about your student film? Like, no one's going to help you raise your money. You know, I don't know why you're wasting your time, but people still do it anyway. And like somebody like Rob Zombie, who obviously, you know, has a little bit of money, you know, he made, you know, 4 mainstream films in a row pretty much. So you know he has some money, and you know, Kevin Smith doesn't do this
shit. Not to mention his platinum records.
Yeah, and Kevin Smith doesn't do, you know, go on Kickstarter to, you know, help fund his movies. He just does it the old-fashioned way like everyone else used to do back in the day. So my opinion with Kickstarter and Indiegogo is not if I ever made a movie, I wouldn't use it because I know I would never, ever, ever be able to make my movie that way. Because like I said, who the fuck cares about my movie? But yeah. Rob Zombie, I think, you know, he could make money from it because he knows people. Like, I'm just going to throw the example. Like, the Angry Video Game Nerd, he raised enough money for his whole movie because he has a following. You know, millions of people watch him on the internet and things like that. So I think that works in that reason. But, like 2 months ago, there was this thing with this guy who was trying to make potato salad, and he put it on Kickstarter, and it raised, like, $300,000 or something like that. Just to prove, yeah, I know it's ridiculous, and that's the point. I think that's why I raised so much money, because it's just trying to prove that, you know, this Kickstarter thing. It's not a good idea, and I wouldn't go through it to make a movie, to be completely honest.
Well, I think that I would like to think that these since it's oversaturated and everybody with a student film uses a Kickstarter. You would think that it would weed out like the good good ideas would be success stories through Kickstarter and Indiegogo and stuff like that. But I think that it's a little bit flawed. I think I like the idea. I like the model. Like, you know, here, pay for your Blu-ray early, and, you know, just, you're going to buy the Blu-ray, pay for it early, you give us the money up front, and then we can fund the film. I think this is the future. I think it's going to be something like that, where you buy your movie ticket in advance, or you buy your Blu-ray in advance, and then you can stay out of the studio system, and you can fund it, and you can get the movies that you want made. And skip the ones that you don't care about.
But what about people Dustin Mills? They don't do Kickstarters and Indiegogos, and they still get their movies made.
What I'm saying is it's flawed now. It's the beginning. And I think that there's going to be some sort of breakthrough that will fix things up a bit. But also, you have to think, the reason that some of these people don't go through this way is because it won't be successful, because it's there's too many people there, and you can't tell the good from the bad, and you can't tell who's an actual filmmaker and who's a dickhead, and it's too problematic as of right now.
That's the thing, man. I've never actually went through and tried to fund films that I had no idea what it was about. You know, you know, just by a title, I'm gonna throw some money into that. Have you guys ever thrown money into a Kickstarter program and then the film not be made?
I refuse to donate to Kickstarter, so, you know.
Okay. I haven't seen anything that was completely worthwhile yet that I had and also had money at the time. Like, those are the two things. Yeah. I have to see something that's really awesome, and I have to have money.
There's been a few indie filmmakers that I personally – I know that I've thrown money towards that actually didn't work out in the end, which sucks because the ideas were really fucking cool and stuff, but I guess – you know, I guess their following wasn't like, you know, the angry video game nerd.
Exactly.
You know, it's so hard. It's so fucking hard to do it that way. I mean,
but that's also a problem. Like, one of the issues that certain people have is this was created for people who can't finance their films to go the independent route and get, you know, the community to do it for these independent filmmakers. But when you have people like Spike Lee and Rob Zombie, who have a huge following, take the attention away from these young up and coming filmmakers, it creates some sort of issue to a certain amount of people. I think there's room for both. I do understand. I understand, like, well, how come Rob Zombie isn't funding this film himself? And to be honest, I don't know. Maybe he's trying to do it this way because of some creative freedom or something. I don't know why he's doing it.
So is this the main reason why
he's doing it? Because he wants to have creative control on the movie.
And, you know, I respect that too. So basically this crowdfunding is it being compared to like the Indiegogo and the Kickstarter programs? Is it basically on the same level? Is that why people don't want to support it?
Yeah, I think it's just like what my professor was doing. Like, there's a PayPal button, you click on it.
Wait, I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry. What was that, Merce?
So I'm, I'm just saying, like, the crowdfunding, or is this what people are complaining about? Like, the crowdfunding is on the same level as the Indiegogo Kickstarter program?
Same thing.
I don't know about that, Jay.
It is essentially the same thing, because the people, us, are funding no matter what program you're going through.
I think he's just trying to raise money. Like, there's no goal he has to reach to make his movie. I just think that he's taking people's money, and whatever he raises, and whatever else he doesn't raise, he'll find other ways to raise it to fund his movie.
The point of him having creative control was brought up, and I think this might actually have a lot to do with it.
It is the same thing. It is Indiegogo. It is Kickstarter.
Exactly.
Because Indiegogo, you don't have to meet your goal to get the money. You get whatever you make. Kickstarter, you do have to reach the goal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I think Rob Zombie. Go ahead.
Well, it would work the same way then, right? So whatever people donate to his film, then that's what he's going to be taking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So essentially, I think it probably has a lot to do with creative control. He's not trying to do this through a studio where, you know, in the past he's had issues. I mean, quite obviously he's had fucking issues with, you know, especially with House of a Thousand Corpses, you know. But I don't blame him, though. Like, he's had a lot of issues and a lot of problems with his films and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe this is way of just, you know, making a film for the fans. I don't know. I don't know what the mentality is.
How do you feel about the fact that Rob Zombie is a multimillionaire, but he's asking us to pay for it? That's the main thing I'm hearing about people that are pissed off. Like, oh, you know, faggot ass Rob Zombie has so much money, but he can't, you know, pay for his own films. He wants us to do it. He's so greedy. It's the same old, like, Rob Zombie's wife, you know, and somehow Sherry Moon Zombie gets drug in. It's like, and his wife is a stupid slut too.
You know, I understand people, you know, where they're coming from and stuff like that. Like, you know, when you really think about it, you know, yeah, Rob Zombie does have a lot of fucking money, but, you know, he's trying to be an indie filmmaker too at the same time, right? So I guess I can kind of respect it on both sides, but, you know, it does rub me the wrong way a little bit, considering, you know, quite obvious how much money he does have.
Yeah.
I mean, what is he planning on doing here? Is he planning on making a movie for, you know, I mean, even a $5 million movie nowadays is still relatively fucking low budget.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think there's a certain mentality when you are doing things where you kind of don't invest in your own, projects, like, you don't take any risk, because when you take the risk, then what stops you from taking the risk over and over again? I think it has something to do with, like, a lifestyle, and, like, I don't know.
I think when I first heard about this, I kind of took it as, like, he wants to see where he stands with his fans, though, too, right? Like, I mean, you know, Rob Zombie's got to be one of the most talked about people in horror films. You know, you either love him or you don't. It seems like there's so many fucking Rob Zombie haters out there. There's a lot of people that really like his films and stuff. I think this is kind of where he, you know, he kind of voices himself and kind of puts himself out there and says, hey, where do I stand? You know, he's kind of like, well, if I can raise this much money or whatever for a film, maybe I actually do have a lot of fans out there and whatnot. I don't know. That's just maybe the mentality. It probably isn't, but that's just how I kind of see it. You guys understand where I'm coming from here?
Yeah.
You know, he's just kind of throwing himself out there, and, like, say his goal in his mind is to raise, you know, $5 million for this film, which is, you know, ridiculous. But, you know, and he raises $100,000. He's like, well, fuck, man. You know, I don't really have the fans that I thought I did, you know. Well, and then he all of a sudden raises, like, $2.5 or $3 million. He's like, fuck, man, maybe I do. Maybe this is a film that I'll put a little more money into, and I'll make it for my fans. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit biased because I really do like Rob Zombie. And I'm kind of defending him too, but this is how I think maybe if I was in that position, I'd be kind of thinking though too, because, you know, he took a lot of fucking shit over his last film. You know, it was, you know, critically fucking bashed. You know, I think a lot of critics didn't like that film. And even in the horror community and stuff, I mean, it's very hit and miss. Like, how many people do you know that just completely dismiss the film and they think it's shit, and then people love it? You know, fucking divided, man. It's so divided, like all of his movies really are. So I think
House of a Thousand Corpses is a modern day masterpiece, in my opinion. But I talked to other, hey, it's called a fucking opinion for a reason.
This is exactly what my point is. And I knew you were going to bring that up too, Jeremy, because I know JP feels opposite. But this is my point, right? Like, his films are very hit and miss with people. And I think this is kind of where he's putting himself right in the middle going, where do I fucking stand? What can I do? What kind of film should I be making? Should I be making a film worth $500,000 or $5 million? You know, I don't know. That's just the way I see it. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, okay. So a couple I was trying to remember all the stuff you just said so I could hit on each thing. I think House of a Thousand Corpses is a hit, but in my opinion, it's not a masterpiece. I'm not saying that you're wrong, Jeremy. I'm just, you know, personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Second, I get what you're saying about the, like, seeing where his fans are at, but I kind of think that might be part of it. And I'm also with you too about, like, I'm trying to be unbiased because I do like Rob Zombie and I do think people give him way too much shit. But at the same time, I'm trying to take myself out of that and look at it from an unbiased perspective on, like, what is up with this decision. And what I came down to is this. Okay, Moods. You can take, you know, a big chunk of the money you have in the bank and do this with it, or you can see if you can get it from other people. Like, it's not too hard of a decision, right? I mean, the probability is that you can get it from other people, your fans, why not do it, I guess, maybe, right? You know, why take the risk if you think you can get it from your fans? And let's be fair here. He's not just taking it. He's offering you something in return, Blu-ray early for $50.
This is exactly what my point is, right? Like, this is kind of where he stands. You know, like, do I have fans right now or don't I have fans? You know, I think it kind of makes sense, but... You know, he's offering good shit, though, too, so...
He is. Did you look at some of the stuff? I mean, it's overpriced, but...
He had, like, a painting of his, right?
Yeah, the signed Blu-ray is... Well, signed is, like, what is the average price for an autograph, you know? So, I mean, you get the signed Blu-ray for $60.
$30, yeah. The signed Blu-ray is $60?
Yeah.
Damn. So, I mean, with signature plus Blu-rays, yeah, that's a little high. But.
I mean, it's a little high for the signature, but that isn't that around what you would pay at, like, a convention or whatever?
Maybe for somebody like Rob Zombie, I don't know.
$50 for a signature?
No. The Blu-ray would be 20.
Yeah.
Right? So, what, like $50 for the – no, 40 bucks.
That'd be 40 bucks for the signature. Well, I think roughly, I mean, for somebody like Rob's, I guess that would probably be normal.
I would say he would be like at a convention. I don't think he does conventions, to be completely honest, but I could see him being like 30 to 35. 35 would be on the high mark.
I mean, isn't Linda Blair charging like 30, 40 bucks for hers now?
20. I pay 20 for mine, but it's 20 for a picture and 20 for a signature, so it's really 40.
Yeah,
but
that's where they're getting you nowadays.
But I just pulled down my pants and tell her to kiss my ass. Okay, I'm paying $20 for.
Well, I think that does include shipping, so I mean, there's an extra, you know, $5. Anyway, I mean, there's some
in cool my stuff case that's
there,
like 15.
And people are buying it. You know,
and it takes 8 months to get there.
376 people out of the 500. You know, and it's, I guess, limited the 500 signed copies, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. 376 out of those 500 are gone.
Times 50, so how much money is that?
Times 60.
How many of those 60? Are gone?
307, what did I say? 378, 376, somewhere around there.
Wow.
So that is $22,000 only.
Yeah, and then, what was the big one? There was like an executive producer, like, it's like 10,000 or some shit, and like it costs like 10,000, but I think there was like two or three claimed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Special effects makeup team hang out with the special effects team. One out of five claimed. That is $1,000. Lifetime Rob Zombie pass. 25 of them claimed they cost $1,000.
But think about it. That's
$25,000 really, right there.
That's really not that much money in filmmaking.
Bro, I mean, but it's honest. Adding up. If you
that's,
look,
okay, 40, if you add it up, what is it going to be? $100,000 if you add all them up? That's really not that much money.
Probably more than that.
Well, let's see. You said 22 plus another 25. And then let's just say that's only 45K. So let's just say another 55K of all the other random people and stuff
Dude, that. I'm looking down through here. Be an extra in the thing plus a set visit, $5,000. That costs. Two people claim that. Four people claim the executive producer spot. People are paying to be extras? Yeah. $10,000. $10,000. Four people claim that. That's $40,000 right there.
All
right, he's getting a good bit from this. You know, it's not going to be like, you know, millions, but it's probably going to help a lot. So, I mean, I think we pretty much covered what we wanted to say. I think crowdfunding has a long way to go before it's where it needs to be to kind of make so a basically big impact. But look at the little girl who made Carver. She did it from crowdfunding because it's something different, something that's fresh, it's something that gets your you know, juices flowing a bit. You want to see what's up with this little girl, see if she can really make a movie.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So, yeah, the Rob Zombie crowdfunding. It's probably a topic that we could talk about for hours, really.
There's a lot of different angles.
Well, yeah, Rob Zombie in general. But, you know, it's a topic that we could tackle from many different angles and probably get into some pretty heated conversations, but you know, it's an interesting one. I'm pretty convinced that it's, you know, he's on the level with it, but that's just me. I don't know. So yeah, we were discussing that, you know, I'm not going to be doing a top five this week or anything like that, but I wanted to ask the viewers out there if they have any questions for us for next week. That we could possibly answer for you. So if you got any questions, let us know what they are. And yeah, we will get to those. We'll be happy to answer all the questions.
Very happy.
Yes, we love the questions. And we've had some pretty interesting ones, you know, last season and whatnot. So, you know, keep those coming. We like them. And we respect all of them. They could be good or bad, you know.
And where can they ask us these questions?
22 Shots of Moods and Horror.
The 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Facebook page, or once this video is uploaded, you can leave comments in there because I think that they're sticking around now. we had some issues last season with YouTube, and oh my good God, it's letting me get into that. So anyways, guys, questions, got any, you know where to leave them. All right, so we are in that portion of the show now. We are into the what we call the triple W, what we watched reviews. We are going to do something a little different. We're not going to do as long as we usually do. I think last season we generally did, you know, three reviews and a pick of the week kind of deal. We're going to shorten it out. We're going to have, you know, one review, then a pick of the week. So,
and we're going to do something called Quick Cuts, where we'll be talking about the movies that we watched also during the week, but just going to give, you know, a one line sentence and a rating.
Yeah.
And
then it's just a little bit faster, you know. Yeah. If Moods has, you know, 20 to 25, 30 films that he watched in a week, he can just, you know, rapidly go through them so we don't have to wait, you know, 3 hours.
Yeah. Okay. So who wants to start us off here?
I'll go first. So the film that I watched, the first one is Proxy. This is my what I watched, I guess. This is from 2013, put out by IFC Midnight, released in 2014, recently, I believe, just a couple weeks ago. Have either of you seen this?
I have not seen the film, but
I heard some good things about it, so.
IFC, so it looks interesting.
Okay, so as always, I will be, you know, spoiler-free as possible. So this one is about a mother or a pregnant woman who is going to get like the sonogram and stuff. And on her way home, this happens very early on in the film. She is hit in the head with a brick, drug into an alley. And then a hooded figure begins to smash her stomach with a brick. So she loses the baby. She starts going to, I kind of call it it reminded me of Fight Club. You know, the group meetings that they were going to in Fight Club, the support groups or whatever they were. So she's going to those, and she meets somebody new. She befriends them, and then the film kind of takes a unconventional narrative turn. It's really
in a good way or a bad way.
In a I don't know way. Like, it was just kind of like it wasn't.
Is that a new term right there? In an I don't know way.
I just didn't. I really don't know how I feel about the story in this film, because it's really unconventional. It's not like anything that I've seen, because there's not. It takes many different turns, and there's a lot of times in the film where I just kind of felt like I don't know what's going on. But at the end, I kind of figured it all out and stuff, you know. And it's not done badly. Like, it's not like, oh, they sucked at making the movie, so you didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, it's just it's mysterious. It doesn't let you know everything right away. You're kind of wondering, like, is this person this, or is like, what's going on here? But it does star one of the stars is Joe Swanberg, who we will be talking about later. I like this guy, man. He's cool. I like his acting. He's also a director. He
graduated from my school, motherfucker.
He did a segment in VHS or VHS 2, one of those. I think it was the first one, the first VHS. I don't really know how much I can say about this film without spoiling, but there's a certain point in the film where it completely goes into an unconventional territory with the storyline. It's very different, and kind of don't expect it.
It's so weird. Like, I can't, like, picture in my mind what the fuck you're talking about. Like, how does it make an unconventional turn? Like, any kind of, like...
It just isn't... It just doesn't... Well, see, that's the thing. You can't really say without, like, spoiling. It's a character shift. And then it kind of... You're expecting something, like, maybe, like, Grace or something like that. But it's really not that much about the pregnancy and the baby. It's about what happens afterwards, and it's like it you really just are kind of unexpecting anything that happens from there on out. It's you can't predict it. It's, it just goes in a completely different direction, and it's about it's not even goes into a completely different direction. The film is about something else later on. It's not even about what it was when it started off. So, yeah, it's a good watch. I did like it. But I'm just unsure of how to review it. So I'm just going to say 7 out of 10, check it out. It was pretty cool there. But one thing I will say, the scenes, stuff with babies and stuff like that really makes me uncomfortable. There's a lot of cool, like, slow-mo shots in here too, with like blood that I thought was pretty cool. But babies, like, creep me out, and that scene is actually very disturbing when she's, you know, smacking the woman's stomach.
Interesting. I wasn't expecting the 7 out of 10. I don't know why. I was expecting a lower rating, just the way you were talking about it, but...
Yeah.
It's very hard to talk about without spoiling.
This one is intriguing. I want to check this out, yeah. So...
It's probably on Netflix.
Yeah, maybe American Netflix.
It is on Netflix.
I don't watch anything on Netflix. I know Moods does, that's what I'm saying.
Well, usually if I'm at work or something like that, I'll check out something. But
it was a really surprising movie, just in terms of, like, the ride. It really is a ride, because you don't know what's going on most of the time, and it, you know, all fits nicely at the end. I mean, but it's something different, and that's what mainly I would say. It's just something different that you got to experience for yourself. You can't really talk about it and not spoil stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, should I go next?
Go ahead.
All right, first movie I'm going to talk about was a film that got released in the UK 2 or 3 years ago. It's a pretty popular film over there in the wonderful country of the United Kingdom. And it finally got a DVD release here in the States, I don't know, like 4 months ago, I think. And it's a revenge-type film, and it's titled Piggy, which is a pretty simple title. And it's a pretty interesting revenge film.
Did you say Piggy or Peggy?
Piggy.
You said Peggy.
Are we going to get into this again with Poltergeist? Jesus.
But anyway, I think so.
But anyway, it's an interesting it's an interesting revenge film about this guy who is pretty much a giant pussy, to be completely honest. He pretty much hates the world. He doesn't do much. He works in this job where he delivers mail and things like that. And one day he meets up with his brother and this girl, and they go out to this bar. And the guy who's a pussy backs up into this giant macho guy. And of course he can't stand up for himself. He just sits there like a fucking idiot. And his brother is the one who stands up for him. And later on in the night, when the brother is walking home, he gets, mugged and beaten by this group of people who, of course, they met in the bar. And he ends up getting murdered, which is not a spoiler. He ends up getting murdered, and flash forwards to, like, I know, a few days after the funeral. And there's a knock at this guy's door, and there's this guy there, and he has no idea who this guy is, who has any memory of ever running into this guy. But this guy says that he knows him, and he knows exactly what happened to his brother and things like that. And he wants to help him take revenge over these people who killed his brother. And it's basically this guy trying to get a little bit of a backbone. And as the film goes on, you know, he becomes less and less of a pussy. And he helps, you know, get revenge on these people from his brother. Now, the film is really not that gory at all. There's practically no gore effects in the film. There's pretty much one scene of any type of gore but there's sound effects and actions and things like that, which implies things. But it's really not an original film, to be completely honest. The revenge aspect is not really that fantastic. It's just, you know, boot somebody's head into the ground and they're dead and they move on. It's not really, you know, like totally, oh, I'm totally going to just fuck you up, like in, say, 7 days or I Spit on Your Grave or anything like that. But it's more of a black humor type film. It's definitely some humorous effects in the film. But I really didn't enjoy it that much. It's an okay film. The acting's good. It has some good cinematography and a few good shots. But as revenge film, it really, really, really didn't do it for me. So I'm going to give this one a 6.5 out of 10. Yeah.
It looks so promising.
Yeah.
You know, it's got pretty cool cover art and stuff.
Yeah.
I do have that film.
Oh, where'd you
have
get it?
I have not watched it yet. Piggy? I bought it at Walmart when it was released.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
If you don't want your suitcase, I'll take it.
No, I want it. That's like the best part of it. It's like, if you don't want the best part, I'll take it.
All right, man. So for my first film of the week here, this is a IFC release in the U.S. In Canada, it is released under MO Pictures, which is the Mongrel label. from 2013, released, I think, just recently. And it's a film called The Den.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have heard of this film.
I have seen it.
Oh, you have seen it. So that's awesome. Basically, it centers around your main character. What's her name? Elizabeth Benton. She has been granted basically money and stuff to do her thesis on chat rooms on the internet and stuff.
Essentially chat roulette.
Chat roulette. Basically chat roulette. Yeah, through the school and stuff. She's been funded to do this, and this is her job now. So basically she's on the internet and
24/7.
That's what she's doing. She's on the internet 24/7 and basically playing chat roulette with people, flipping through, and she's there to monitor, like, you know, internet habits and stuff like that and what people are doing and whatnot. Anyways, one night she comes across this this creepy person. You know, she starts talking to this, like, creepy-ass person. Anyways, they end up showing a video that seems way too real of this girl being tied up, kind of like in a torture-type deal, and getting her throat essentially slit and killed. She figures that it's just way too real, so she kind of reports it to the police. And the police are like, well, there's not really a whole lot we can do and stuff like that. So, and she's very kind of I guess what is the word? She's freaked out by this. She is totally thinking that this is real. and whatnot. And so basically everything kind of spirals out of control from there. You know, obviously with this person that starts harassing her more and more, and then shit kind of turns real in reality and whatnot. my thoughts on this film. It was really, really well done.
Ooh, I'm glad you liked it.
Is it found footage, or is it just like...
It's okay, essentially it's not, found footage, it's per se.
It's essentially, I was getting to that.
So like The Sacrament?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, kind of, in that way where it's not really found footage, but it's, yeah, it's in that, yeah, world.
All right.
Okay, so I was getting to that point. So my thoughts on this, I really liked how this was done. It was, everything was basically shot from her laptop computer. Yeah. Right, like, or her cameras and stuff like that. So that's how the whole movie is. It's not essentially a, you know, found footage, but it can fall into that found footage kind of category.
Yeah.
Really, really fucking well done, in my opinion. I think I really don't want to say the wrong thing here. This is another one that's kind of hard to spoil because
far less gimmicky than you would expect, though, don't you think?
Exactly. The whole idea when I first heard of this movie being kind of all essentially shot on laptop, and that's how you know you're. That's how it's shown through the film, or to you. And to be honest, I was like, I don't know about this one, but it turns out it was really fucking well done, really creepy, really well executed, in my opinion. And then, you know, you come to the third act of the film and it's fucking executed awesome. I think the ending of this movie was brilliant. It was actually really fucking creepy.
Yeah, I like the ending.
The ending was executed so perfectly because you're kind of going, what the fuck is with all these people? Maybe minor spoiler there, but what the fuck is going on here with all this and that? And then when it ends, you're like, oh shit, that's what it was doing. Really well executed. I love the masks used in this film. What do you think of the masks, JP?
I liked them.
I thought they were fucking awesome, but you know, there's not really a whole lot to say about it. It's kind of one of those films that you kind of have to see for yourself to really appreciate.
I have a little bit to add, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that one of my, like, minor critiques is just that the scale of things felt a little too big at times. You know what I mean? Did you kind of get that feeling by the end, like it felt maybe just a little too big?
Well, it kind of...
The scale of the operation.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying because, you know, most of the film is taking place, you know, from her computer, her kind of area, her safe place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you mean. It kind of... The setting expands itself a little too much, I think. But, you know, it didn't overly bother me.
No,
because
it's just minor.
Because what you realize is what's going on. There's a totally bigger picture here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think essentially it does actually work for what they accomplished. And then I think it kind of sucks itself back in the very last scene of the film. I think it sucked right back in that very last shot.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It brings it all full circle and you're like, shit.
And I think that, fuck, you know, back.
And I thought it was chilling and it actually, I stared at the screen. Mm-hmm. In the credits, I was like, holy fuck, that's awesome. I was like, it just blew me away. I was like really, really surprised by it. And I was like, awesome.
I also really liked the lead character. I thought she fit really well, felt like a you know, perfect character, perfect actress for that character. And I will say, you know, being that it's, you know, far less gimmicky than we thought, when you talk about, you know, like how it's kind of a found footage, it's in that world, it actually makes, you know, absolute sense that you would do this film like that. You know, it mm-hmm. fits yep. for once. And that's one of the problems people have with that style of filmmaking is it's always forced and it doesn't fit very often. Blair Witch Project, it fits. This, yep. it fits. And I really liked that about the film. And I was expecting really gimmicky, like, smiley type shit, whatever.
Oh, my
because
good lord.
This girl was in Smiley,
my turd
by the
is
way.
Better than Smiley.
I'm not joking. I was expecting something kind of like that, too.
Yeah, the lead first actress thing I thought of. Is in Smiley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. But, yeah, ironically enough, right? And, you know, I really thought it was relevant though too with you know, with the computer hacking.
Yeah, and
you know how she gets fucked up. And I mean, this stuff really does happen, right? It really does happen and stuff. And I thought that was really
it just happened.
Yeah, it's yeah exactly. Exactly, right? But the way they execute it in the film and the way they filmed it and stuff, I thought it was really fucking well done. It had me intrigued. Like, here's a perfect example, or this is a perfect example of a film that, you know, can draw you in right away in the movie. I watched it with my wife, and she was essentially going to bed. We just finished another movie, and she's like, well, she's like, I might be able to last like another 10, 15 minutes before I fall asleep. And I was like, okay, whatever. So we got about that point in the film, and she's like, you know, up and wide awake and finished this film and just absolutely loved it too. She said she couldn't fall asleep. So that says a lot. I mean, if you know my wife, that's amazing. She falls asleep to everything. But this movie was so – I love the pacing of the film. It gets into it right away. I don't know how long it runs. It runs – oh, it's actually quite short. So it's about 76 minutes. But it's short. Perfectly – it does. It feels like a perfect length, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They didn't overdo any certain scenes. I don't really want to give anything away with her boyfriend and her friend, like all that type of things and stuff. But you know, I don't want to say anything. You guys can check it out for yourself. But I think the pacing was perfect and it was executed perfectly. So
the last thing I want to add on this is the director. I did talk to him. On Twitter, and you know, it was funny because like the first thing I said was, and I didn't realize like how it could have sounded at the time, but I was like, dude, I just saw your film, far less gimmicky than I was expecting. It was awesome. And he was like, oh, thanks, man. And I want to say this one was kind of buried, man. I didn't hear anything about this one. It was a nice little gem. And I asked him, you know, like, how was the marketing on this one? You know, like, I didn't hear anything about it. And we got to chatting and stuff. But another thing is the whole chat roulette thing. I can tell that the director actually went out there and did some research on what that is like, because I've done it many times. Me and my friends think it's fucking hilarious. Always a dude jerking off, and they right away they throw that in there like as like, yeah, you guys know what's up, this is what it normally is. And then there's like the random guy that is like playing guitar and is like really good at it, and then there's like the, you know, practical joke where they scare you, or like the fake suicide.
Hey,
like,
Kyle, look, another nice young Jewish boy.
They nailed all the like key things that happen when you're on chat roulette. Exactly. So I appreciated the effort put into that.
I was going to get to that too. Actually, I really enjoyed that. I thought the jerking off shit was just fucking funny because it's so true. But I mean, like you said, though, everything that they did throw into what she was watching was, you know, essentially what it, you know, the chat roulette is all about. Right. So no, it was really well done. If I had to rate this film, it's one of those movies that really did stick with me. And, I was thinking about it for a couple of days after, and I was like, fuck, it's so good. I'm probably going to give it like an 8.5 out of 10.
Wow!
Wow, that's a pretty high rating.
That means you have a movie better than an 8.5.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. But like I said, though, it just surprised me on all levels, because I went into it with, you know, my normal expectations. I wasn't really expecting a whole lot. And you know, like you brought up Smiley, and that's pretty much kind of what I was expecting. But just so much better, so much better. I really enjoyed it.
Interesting.
My rating, I believe, was a 7. I watched this one in the hotel that I was staying at while my house caught on fire.
7. Wow. I feel very generous. But no, I don't, though. I stand by it because I really highly recommend it. I think it's one of the better, you know, type, well, quote unquote, you know, found footage films or whatever. But
is it contender for top 10 of the year?
That ending, dude, really, really sold me, man. It was really good.
I had to go pick this up.
The last scene in the film, I was like, fuck. It just, wow. It just made sense. And it was just, it really kind of puts things into perspective of how fucking, I'm not going to say anything else, but just check it out.
I have to go pick this up after the show.
Awesome. So, JP, awesome. You got another one?
What's your pick of the week? Okay, so my pick of the week this week is I'm gonna fuck this title up. The House by the Edge of the Park. Is that what it is?
I think it's labeled a few different ways. House on the Edge of the Park. I don't know. I think that's what I call it all the time. House on the Edge of the Park. All
right. I thought it was for some reason House by the Edge of the Park or something. But okay, that film from 1980, I believe, House on the Edge of the Park is the name of it. Okay. Got it. This is a film that I've never seen before. I watched it this week for Body Bags. It was recommended to me by Jesse Midnight Crawler. And I really did like this film. I think Moods and a couple other people that may have seen my review kind of might have thought that I didn't like it as much as I did, because I had one big problem with it, and that was the ending. It follows two kind of low-life punks, one played by David Hess from Last House fame, and they are invited – not really invited. They kind of invite themselves to a party in some weird little villa, kind of rich, snobby people are the host of the party. They start getting messed with, David Hess and his kind of slower friend start getting taken advantage of and messed with. Pretty much decide to strike back, pull out like a razor blade and take the party hostage. There's some torture and, you know, mayhem and rape and stuff like that going on.
Well, there has to be rape.
Yeah, right. David Hess is awesome in this film. I think this is a lot better than Last House on the Left. I hear people compare it to that many times because it's kind of a similar film. But I don't think David Hess is playing the same character, and I was curious to hear what you thought on that, Moods. Do you think he's playing the same character?
I don't think completely. I mean, you can't deny that there's definitely comparison issues there. You know, but no, I think essentially, I think you were right in what you said. I think there's a little more to this character than there is in Last House on the Left.
Yeah, I think there's more layers. And I mean, obviously he's playing a rapist and he's like playing a criminal. Like, yeah, obviously they're going to be very similar. But I think the thought process and the mental state of this character is a little different than – a lot different than the one in Last House on the Left. I think the ones in Last House on the Left are more basic. So my problem with this film, like I said, was the twist. And I'm not going to spoil it, but the reason why is when a good twist happens, you should be able to watch the film back and see like, this film, I feel like the characters don't even know. It's like they're being tricked too. They're being twisted, because I don't feel like there's any signs of it or the it makes sense, because these characters are not acting like they know what they know. And it also opens up for a lot of different plot holes, at least I thought it did.
Yeah, the twist in House on the Edge of the Park. Now, my thoughts on the twist. I don't think you mentioned in the synopsis that the film starts out with David Hess raping a girl.
Yes, it does. So instantly we know he's the bad guy.
Yeah, so we know that David Hess's character is a fucking scumbag.
If you couldn't tell just by looking at him.
See, now, in my opinion, I think that is enough reason to kind of make the twist work a little bit, but I do understand where you're coming from. I really don't want to say the wrong thing here without giving away, because I know there's a lot of people that haven't seen this film, but I think the explanation behind why they, you know, what happened at that house and stuff in the very end, I think it is justified though. Like, I think it does kind of work, and I think it's more – maybe it's more surprising. I think it's more surprising because – I mean, what they did, I mean, everything that they did was calculated.
But that's, you know,
with them going to the shop, I mean,
I get all that.
Their broken car. I mean, they picked them up purposely. You know, that was the whole goal. But I do understand where you're coming from with some of the things that happened inside the house. But, you know, once they kind of distinguish what they were doing, you know, it does kind of make sense. I know you have issues with, you know, the police not knowing and stuff like that. I think it's, you know, those are elements that I never really considered, because I just kind of figured that maybe it wasn't reported.
But then how would the, you know.
Well, no, I mean, Buddy's sister, would have obviously told him, right? And I think that's where I'm coming from. Like, she obviously told her brother what had happened, and she obviously knew
who David Hess was. I was under the impression she was dead.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she died.
Okay, okay.
I never got that. So I'm assuming that
would make a little
exactly. So I'm thinking that she knew David Hess's character, and she told her brother because she survived and whatnot, and then they calculated this, you know, revenge. It's essentially a revenge film.
But why wasn't she there then?
Well, because it would be obvious, because if she's there at the house, then they would know something's up.
But why wouldn't she have, like, you know, like,
showed up right
I understand, but that's not even the thing. The thing that bothers me is that once the twist is announced, you think back at all the, like, things that the characters did and didn't do, and then you realize that it kind of betrays the characters because they never acted as if they knew all of this in the film. Well, the one main guy.
Yeah, yeah, the brother.
But everybody else, like, it just seemed like, okay, like, how far do you take it? Like, why are you not acting fast, like, sooner? Why are you letting it get so far out of hand? I just didn't feel like it feels like the characters never even knew about it. Like, it feels like it plays the way you think it's playing. Like, when a twist happens, you should be able to go back and see it.
Yeah, either those characters are, like, really good at hiding secrets and stuff and hiding their emotions, or it's just kind of a – it's kind of a very kind of thin script.
But why, though? You know what I'm saying? You know, that is what it's a thin script. But why would the characters be hiding their emotions?
I don't know. But, I mean, essentially what you're watching is you're watching a bunch of rich people, you know, be fucking dicks.
My thing is, I like that. I like, why can't we have dicks versus dicks here? Like, why can't it just be people are bad? All people are bad. There are bad people, and sometimes two groups of bad people meet.
I think this is what separates this movie from, like, you know, these type of rape revenge or these home invasion type films. I think this one really kind of separates itself because in this movie, everybody's a fucking scumbag.
And that's why I liked it at first. And then I felt like it betrayed what it was doing by the end. I was like, but, I still like it. I still like it a lot. It's my pick of the week. I really did enjoy the movie. But
yeah, it's an interesting take on what, like, you know, like I said, revenge and home invasion stuff. So I don't know, man. I think it's I think it just depends on which angle you tackle this from, right? I think we're kind of there, but we're not, you know, on the same level. But the way I see it, you know, is the way I said, and it's just the way I've always kind of taken it. I think once you watch it a couple times, I think it might make, you know, I don't know, maybe you might pick up on more things or whatever, but I don't know.
I love the opening shots and the ending shots. I thought it was a, like, nice, like, you know, cover, like, front cover and back cover to it. It was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you rate that film?
I gave it a 7. The whole time I always think about, like, towards the end of the film, like, all right, what am I going to rate this? And, like, I was at, like, 8.5 until that twist. It really did hurt the film a lot for me because I do think it betrays a lot of the things that happened throughout the film. And, you know, it's all subjective, and, you know, obviously you see it in a different way than me. The way I've seen it, it betrays things. So that's why I lowered my score.
Well, maybe we should ask Jesse what he thinks of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd assume he probably would be more along the lines of where you are because, you know, he obviously did recommend it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool, man. So, Jeremy, pick of the week.
All right. My pick of the week is a film that – and I have the character names in front of me so I don't fucking sound like an idiot like last time. My pick of the week is a film that came out in the year 2013, released in 2014 by Draft House Films, and that is a film titled Cheap Thrills. Now, before I start, I just want to say that this film is very, very, very similar to a film that came out from – by Dimension Extreme, like 5 or 6 years ago, titled 13 Games of Death, which is, I think, I don't know. Can't remember what country it was made in, but it follows a very, very similar premise, and I'm very curious to know if that movie was influenced this Cheap Thrills in any way, because it's a very, very similar premise and things like that. But the film is basically, it stars Pat Healy as a character named Craig, who is very down on his luck.
He Pat Healy?
Pat Healy,
who is Bam Bam Healy, the UFC fighter?
Who is a Chicago native, and you know, he's a pretty big actor in this area. He was in Star Trek and The Innkeepers and films like that. But he plays Craig, who is a guy that's pretty down on his luck. He has a wife and a newborn, and one day he could tell he scrapped on his luck. He doesn't have much money and things like that. And one day he opens up his door as he leaves to work, and he finds an eviction notice on his front door. And that's shitty enough as it is, but as he goes to his job, of course, this aspect is like, eh. He gets fired from his job, and he's very confused about what he's going to do with his family and how he's going to get enough money to, you know, save his family. So he decides to go to a bar and get wasted, and he runs into a old friend by the name of Vince, who he hasn't seen since like the fifth grade. Vince is a little bit of a badass motherfucker. He doesn't really care about how he makes his money, but he makes his money in, you know, in dirty ways, obviously. So they start talking, and one time Craig goes to the bathroom, and he runs to this guy who's doing coke in the bathroom, who of course is a character that we meet later on in the film. And he sees $50 in the toilet, and of course he takes the $50 from the toilet. And as he you know goes outside, he sees Vince with these two people. One of the guys named Colin, who is played by David Kocher, who is an Anchorman in films like that, and his girlfriend and his wife, Violet, played by Sarah Paxton, who's probably looking her best in this movie. And he goes over there and they start partying and things like that. And we learn that it's Violet's birthday, and this guy's loaded. He's blowing money out everywhere, drinking all the expensive booze and things like that. And we learn that, and he learns that, you know, Craig's a little bit out on his luck, and he needs money. So they start, you know, doing little games to raise money, like go up to a girl at the bar and say something offended that she slaps you in the face, and I'll give you $200. So Craig is a little bit of a pussy at the beginning. He doesn't do many things like that. He doesn't do many of the things to make money. But as the night goes on and they take the party over to Colin's house, things start to get a little more insane. And the games that they have to do becomes a little bit more and more extreme. Like, let's say... I'll give you $50,000 if you cut off your pinky. That's one that's like the main thing in the film, which is kind of funny because he accidentally cut off half of his pinky when he was doing the scene, and he had to get it sewn back on, which is kind of funny to actually think that.
Awesome. Did they give him $50,000?
But he becomes a more and more of a badass as the film goes on, and he starts to do more and more extreme things. This film is very, like I said, it's very similar to 13 Games of Death, and very, very, very similar to, let's say, Would You Rather, with, you know, people doing things for money to themselves. I think the ending is a little eh. It feels a little bit of a cop out to me, just a tiny bit.
So it is very similar, like 13 Games of Death, then.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah.
I think they could have ended the film in a little bit of a better way, a little bit more closure and things like that. Kind of just abruptly ends after the climax of the third act. But overall, the film is a really fun film. If you like black horror films, it's definitely a good one to watch. It's nothing like fantastic, or you know, it will probably be towards the bottom of my list when we do our top tens at the end of the year, but. It's nothing really that amazing. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10 again. So check it out. It's worth a pickup. It's a fun film. So yeah. Yeah.
I definitely want to check this out, man. Especially because of who released it too. They seem to release pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, so. Draft House is a really awesome company, so
yeah, yeah.
Cool. I always pick up their releases.
All right.
Every time I hear the description of like movies like that, I always think of Cutting Cards from the Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like that too. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite Tales from the Crypt episode.
So my pick of the week is a brand new release by Anchor Bay. Go figure, Anchor Bay.
Oh, yeah, I know. This
is. And it is, yeah, brand new from 2014, and it's called Septic Man.
Yeah.
I didn't really know, you know, what to expect from this, but yeah, it came through. Basically, it's a very simple premise. It's about a guy named Jack. He is a he's basically, you know, your shit guy. He cleans out, you know, septic areas, and that's what he does, you know, for a living. Anyways, the town is having a serious issue. They've been basically evacuated because the water's all been tainted, and, you know, they've kind of quarantined the city and stuff. They can't figure out what the fuck is going on. So they want everybody out of the city so they're not exposed to this water, this contaminated water and stuff. So anyways, they call in Jack to go and figure out what the hell's going on in this, with the septic and stuff. So anyways, one day he makes his way down to this, down below into the septic area and stuff. And then he discovers what the problem is that there is actually a bunch of bodies that are stuck like in the septic area, and it's like polluting the water and stuff like that. And anyways, so once he figures out what's going on, there another problem arouses. He can't fucking get out of what he's in. He's in this fucking septic area, and now he's stuck in there. And so basically the story is Jack kind of like kind of turning into the septic man. You know, he's down there and he's being exposed to all the toxins of the septic shit and piss and gross shit.
Oh, that sounds so fucking awesome.
So he's stuck down there and he's like, he can't get out. And so you actually see him through the film kind of like he's got – I love the special effects. Like the makeup is awesome because it progresses into this kind of like Toxic Avenger type character. And I've actually even heard people kind of compare it to that. It's not like the Toxic Avenger at all, but he kind of turns into the Septic Man and whatnot. And I'm not going to really ruin anything on what happens, like why these bodies are ending up in the septic area and stuff like that. But it turns into a battle against him and, you know, the person that's responsible for these bodies and shit like that in there. But during, you know, this whole process, he's turning into this fucking monster and shit like that. It's fucking fantastic. Loved it. Really, really fun film. It's kind of another one of those what do you call them, JP? Confined horror films?
We call them contained horror films.
Contained. I keep wanting to say confined. Confined, contained, very similar. But yeah, this one essentially takes place all in this, you know, the septic area and stuff like that. But it's got some really, really cool elements. And, you know, it's got an interesting type battle to it and stuff. And it's got a very interesting outcome to it because, you know, which I, again, don't want to ruin. But, you know, the film is called Septic Man. So you can kind of figure, you know, exactly maybe what the outcome is, but I don't know. It's just a really, really fun film, and it's fucking disgusting.
I gotta check this out.
Okay, now I have to say, man, the effects in this film are really well done. Like I said, the makeup's awesome, but a lot of, you know, really gnarly looking dead bodies, but a lot of shit and a lot of puking and a lot of fucking just, you know, that natural progression of you basically dying on the outside and just a lot of puking, man. It's really awfully gross film. But it's if you can get through that, it's everything's practical.
Oh, nice.
The whole film is practical, and that's what I loved about it. But it's the progression in the film is just, oh my good God, it's gross. It's really fucking nasty to watch. If you don't like watching people puke and nasty ass bodies rotting and shit and stuff. But it's really fun. I really like the character of Jack and his transformation and stuff. And I couldn't recommend this enough. This is probably one of the better Anchor Bay releases in a long time.
Now, JP, you go to Walmart more than me. Did they have this at Walmart?
They did not.
Oh, fuck. I want to go pick up The Den now in this movie.
Yeah, it's really fucking fun.
They still have The Den at Walmart, though.
Mm. Now, if I had to rate this one, I probably – which is – oddly enough, I can't give it a higher rating than The Den, even though The Den was my pick of the week, or this is my pick of the week. I think this movie is just, it's like a different level of fun.
Yeah.
It's not as well made, you know, per se as The Den. The Den is just a totally different type of film. I will give this one like a solid 7.5. But it's definitely worth checking out, man. If you like practical effects and just, you know, a very simple story, but it's got a pretty cool outcome. I really enjoy it. I think it's interesting. And, you know, it's one of these films that can definitely be made, you know, into sequels and stuff, which is very cool. Cause I'm pretty fucking positive they're going to make a sequel to Septic Man, you know.
And Septic Man.
The thing about the pick of the week, it's not necessarily the best film. It's more goes into it than just which film's better. Mm. So, you know, that's why your ratings can be like that.
Exactly. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun with this and it just kind of shocked me. I didn't really know what to expect from this, but man, was it ever gross. So it sold me. Really cool.
Check that out.
Yeah. Definitely check out those films. Awesome stuff. So
awesome.
But yeah. So yeah, that's going to do it for the pick of the weeks.
Quick cuts.
We're going to get into a little segment called Quick Cuts. JP, you want to start?
Yeah, I'm going to do it quick too. Okay, so first up, I watched Godzilla, and that is from the, 50s, 60s? 54? Yeah, man, I was actually surprised at how well the effects were for 54, man. I mean, it was dark. I love how dark they keep it, and it really is kind of... you know, scary, I guess, you know, if you really put yourself there, it's like, wow, man, this would be pretty crazy seeing something like this, like on film. And, I really liked Godzilla.
And the thing I like about the original Godzilla is that Godzilla was bad.
Yeah. That's what I really liked about it. I didn't realize how much I liked that until, later on in my week. And so Godzilla being dark was really cool, and it is dark. He's bad and dark, and I love it.
Are you gonna give a rating for these or no?
I gave that one an 8. Then all right, Godzilla Raids Again, which I don't know when that came out. Does anybody know? 650 something,
I think it was a couple years later.
55. Yeah. Okay, so Godzilla Raids Again. This one I also really, really liked. It is just a nice follow up to Godzilla. He's now fighting something else besides people. Not the greatest, you know, villain, I guess. You know, there's many great ones throughout Godzilla's history. This probably I've not seen all the films, but I would assume that this probably isn't the one that comes back the most. But, you know, it was cool to see them fight. Once again, dark. I actually liked this one a little bit more up until, like, the halfway point, and then I felt it went down a bit. I give that one a 7 out of 10. Then I watched King Kong versus Godzilla. I thought this one was a big step down in the Godzilla films. Didn't really like it too much. I don't know. It just wasn't really that good to me. That one came out in 62. I give it a 6 out of 10. And then I watched Mothra versus Godzilla. And that one, I was just like, look at a stupid moth. I don't get it. I don't like the fairies. It's just such a different tone than the first three. Yeah. And I think it's like cultural. It was not for me. It's not something that I'm interested in. And I really didn't like Mothra versus Godzilla too much. But I got to say, there was some cool, you know, miniatures and stuff like that. So I give that one about a 5.5 to a 6 out of 10. We'll go 6 out of 10. And then finally, I watched Sometimes They Come Back. This is, of course, a Stephen King film. And I really like this one. It was a TV movie, 1991. That's the year I was born. And it's kind of a depressing film for me. I kind of liken it to Pet Sematary in terms of it's just sad. He's going back to his hometown and everything sucks. Everything's old and worn out, and you know, there's a lot of scars from in that hometown. So it's really depressing, but I've always liked this one. It's cool. I give Sometimes They Come Back a 7 out of 10. And that's my quick cuts. Was that quick enough?
That was quick.
Thank you.
All right, am I next?
That's what they she
said. Right, I'm going to be talking about a few movies I've watched over the last few weeks. So first I'm going to talk about is a film called Afflicted. Came out a few weeks ago. Found footage film. Film very hyped. Everyone's been talking about how it's one of the best found footage films. Wasn't for me. Thought it was a pretty boring vampire tale. I did not like it. I gave that one a 4 out of 10. Did not do it for me.
Whoa.
Yeah. Next film I'm going to talk about is The Conspiracy. Came up in Macabre earlier on in 2014. It's another film that's like fucking The Sacrament and The Den, I assume. Really, really interesting story. Really well done. A fresh story. I really enjoyed that one. I give that one a 8 out of 10, actually. That one was pretty good. And another one I watched, it's a slash film, Madison County, which is directed by the guy who did Contracted. This is a pretty shitty slasher film, to be completely honest. The characters fall flat. Yeah. It's just pork chops, but just on a little bit of a higher budget. Not very good. I know they're making a sequel coming up, but I'll probably watch it sooner or later when it comes out cheap. But that one also got a 4 out of 10. Very, very crappy. And then the last one I want to talk about is I Spit on Your Grave 2, which I watched a while ago. But it's definitely more brutal than the first remake. Of course, it's a remake. A lot brutal than the first film. I guess I was kind of bored by it. I really didn't feel for the character, even though she got some pretty fucked up shit happening to her. Thought the ending was pretty good. It was all right. I give that one a 6 out of 10. And then I'm not going to talk about Leprechaun Origins. We'll talk about that one later on, but that shall be it.
Damn, Jeremy, you're even quicker than me.
Nice, nice. I'm definitely gonna, you know, squish mine down a little bit here. But I watched Blood Glacier this week.
I just picked that up today.
Basically kind of like a it's kind of like it's almost like a Thing ripoff, but like in a good way, about like this glacier that's got like this red type material that's kind of, you know, mutating specimens and stuff, and then they mutate from there inside other, you know, hosts and whatnot and stuff. Really cool premise. I really enjoyed this film. It was fucking awesome. I'd definitely give it probably about a 7.5. I think a lot of people are on the same level right now. Really fun film. Next up, I watched Joyride 3. Joyride 3 was, you know, mindless fun. Basically the same premise of all the other, you know, the other two Joyride films. Rusty Nail fucking some shit up.
Candy cane.
Exactly right. He actually even brings it up too, because one of the characters' name is Candy. He's like, I knew a candy cane one time.
Oh, that is awesome. That's called a callback.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And so Joyride 3, you know, it's fun for what it is. It's not everybody's cup of tea. It's just mindless fun. Pretty gory. Some pretty interesting kills. There was one really fucking awesome one I really enjoyed. I give it about a 6.5. You know, it's not a great film, but the kills definitely saved it. Next up is In the House of Flies. I talked about this one earlier. Like I said, it's one of those contained horror films about a couple that's drugged, whatnot, and they're fucked around with and stuff. Very cool film. I really enjoyed it. I give it about a 7 out of 10. Next up is Discopath, which I actually talked about earlier too. Discopath, I watched this again. I love this movie. I love the premise of it. It starts out in New York. And basically what happens is, you know, this guy starts going fucking crazy. Anyways, he makes his way to Montreal. So this movie is like half subtitled. I thought I'd throw that in there for people that.
Right up JP's alley.
Yeah. So it, like I said, it starts in New York and they make their way to Montreal. So this is actually a Canadian film, but, very cool premise. It's different. You know, it's a different type of premise, you know, for, you know, what could seem to be a generic slasher film, but it's not really at all. It's kind of different. I give it about a 7 out of 10 too. Next up, I watched Deadly Eyes again. Fucking love Deadly Eyes. How can you beat dogs dressed up in rat suits? It's really gory and fun. It's just one of those great, you know, 80s type fucking killer rat films. Awesome film. I give this one about an 8 out of 10. It's fantastic. Jeremy, I rewatched this again after I did my review of The Phantom Carriage. Watched it again. I had to.
Masterpiece.
Oh man, this is the only movie that I've ever reviewed that I give a full 10 out of 10 to. Just a fantastic silent film. It's
I give it an 11 out of 10.
That's it's good, really, really good. And Jeremy brought up an interesting note that I didn't really catch on to at first about how The Shining kind of ripped off a certain scene out of this film, which was done about 60 years earlier. Didn't notice myself when I watched the film, but as soon as he told me, I was like, holy fuck, you know, that's quite possibly what happened there. I'm not going to say the scene. I don't want to give anything away, but if you've never seen The Phantom Carriage, it's probably the best silent film I've ever seen in my life. It's just fantastic. Really well executed. Cool structure. Really cool structure. Okay, next up I watched Stag Night. It's basically exactly how it sounds. It takes place on the night of, you know, Buddy's stag party. These guys start harassing this girl on a train, or one of the characters does. Anyways, he gets pepper sprayed. They step out for a second. Train takes off, and now they're trapped in like this underground area of New York. And of course, there's fucking cannibals chasing them. And yeah, shit doesn't go too well for them. But it's actually really entertaining. I really enjoyed it. Some pretty good kills, gore. Not bad. One of the better Ghost House Underground films, in my opinion. Yeah, not too bad. I would probably give that one, yeah, about a loose 7 on that one. Watch Snap's release of Curtains this week. You know, Curtains is a really interesting slasher film about a director who's bringing in these actresses to try out for this play. And then they start, you know, people in the house are getting picked off one by one and whatnot and stuff. It's an interesting film. It's a really slow type burn film with some really good cinematography in it and whatnot and stuff. This is one of those films that probably isn't for everybody. If you're a really big slasher fan, I would definitely check it out. But you know, it's definitely worth a watch. But Curtains, I give a 7.5. I really enjoy the film. I think it's kind of creepy at times. Next up, I watched another Snaps release called 40 Seconds to Forever.
Keep what going. We're laughing because you watch so many movies.
Dude. And those were just today.
Okay. I actually fucking, like I said, I even cut this down quite a bit.
What?
Okay. So next up, I watched another Snaps release called 42nd Street Forever. This is basically a trailer, you know, compilation of the first two DVD releases plus some new trailers and stuff. This release runs about 4 hours long. It's all trailers, and it actually kind of breaks it up into subcategories. You got exploitation, you got black exploitation, you got like even almost like pornographic ones, you got horror, sci-fi, and it's about 4 hours of trailers. Man, this shit rips by. It rips by. It's so entertaining. I love watching older trailers, man. They're really well done.
Do you have Shock Treatment moods?
No, I don't.
Pick that up. It's directed by fucking George Romero's son. It's a whole bunch of trailer compilations like that, and it has some original trailers that spoof, you know, old drive-in trailers and things like that.
Oh, nice.
It's really
nice.
Awesome. I don't know if it's out of print anymore, but
yeah, I really highly recommend this Blu-ray, man. It's got some really entertaining, especially the black exploitation trailers are fucking hilarious, like so funny. Definitely give it about an 8.5 out of 10. It's super entertaining for what you get. For it's like 4 hours of trailers. I mean, come on. Next up, I watched a very low budget film called San Francisco. Yeah, it's pretty much what it is. It's some dude running around.
Oh, is this Is this the one with the guy under the bridge?
Yeah, in San Francisco. Yeah, so it's called San Francisco Psycho, and it's exactly what it sounds like. This guy's running around, and he's kind of doing things based off the Bible and very generic type storyline. It's actually the cop in the film is. What the fuck is his name? Charlie Sheen's uncle is actually, it's so funny. It's like Martin Sheen's brother. But he looks and sounds exactly like him. Anyways, not that great of a film, but I do give it a pass. I give it about a 5 out of 10. There was actually some pretty entertaining moments in this film. Next up or last for this list, I watched Almost Human, which I believe was actually maybe a week and a half ago or something like that. I know JP actually reviewed this on Body Bags. Very entertaining film. I know some people have problems with it just going from scene to scene and stuff. I thought it was entertaining as shit. Good kills, all practical. And I give it about a 7 out of 10. So
100% it was agree with everything you said.
That was pretty much
the rating.
Yeah, it was another great IFC release, in my opinion. So, yeah.
And that was all 22 of Moods's.
Yeah, that's it, Moods.
That is going to be it for the quick picks.
quick so cuts. Probably
10 minute or quick cuts. My bad. Alrighty, so with that said, that brings us to the final review. And this week we are going to be reviewing a film by a very well-known director. Everybody knows Ty West. You know, he's most famous for House of the Devil, probably.
Yeah.
You know, The Innkeepers and, you know, his mediocre, well, not his version of Cabin Fever 2. And that is the 2014 release of The Sacrament. JP, do you want to do the honors of introducing the film?
Yes, and this is actually the second Ty West film we've covered. Did we do that? Yeah. Did we cover any directors twice besides in like franchise episodes?
No, and you know I never thought of that until you said that. But we did do House of the Devil, didn't we?
Yep. So this film was released in 2014. It was, you know, from 2013 though. It hit the festivals and stuff. It follows a news team who decide to go into a undisclosed location after meeting a man who says that his sister is missing. She contacted him. She's living at a place called Eden Parish. They take a helicopter ride in there. It's very mysterious. Like, they don't really know where they're going. There's not a whole lot of...
Yeah, they never really say where it is. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, undisclosed location because, you know, it's very secretive, obviously.
I noticed that too.
Yeah. They go in and they document this village of people who were from the U.S. It's obviously outside the U.S. They go there. They meet some people. They interview some people. And there's one guy that everybody calls Father who seems to be the leader. Obviously, this seems very cult-like. They're a bit skeptical. Eventually, they feel a little bit more relieved that it doesn't seem as crazy as you would think. And then that's pretty much where we'll leave it off. These people are thrust into this cult-like situation.
Mm-hmm. Read off the start of the film. I had this very odd moment. Basically, when the credits were playing, they were playing like this fucking good, happy feel music. It totally reminded me of Spring Breakers.
Oh, that's my
intro like to Spring Breakers.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorite intros.
So I'm wondering if this is becoming like a new thing. You know, you kind of put this music to kind of set up the film that is totally not representative of that song. You know what I'm saying?
I've always music liked does not, that type of stuff.
Yeah, that, I mean, obviously the content of the film after the opening track is not relative to the music, but I noticed that right away and I thought that was interesting. I really did like that though. I thought it was a very good start to the film. Really interesting start.
Yeah, and once they're in there, I do feel like they did a good job of really getting the point across that this is a, you know, wonderful place. Like, and it didn't feel like forced, you know what I mean? It didn't feel like, over the top, like, oh yeah, I can see through this, you know? It felt genuinely like, okay, this is actually like even as a viewer, I know because I watch films that sinister is coming.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, it's like, this place doesn't seem like anything could go wrong. You're like, what's going to happen?
But
it's
as interesting. A viewer, I was like, like, this is really like an awesome place. Like, I would want to stay here.
It's very interesting that you guys looked at it like that right away, because the way I seen it is that, you know, the crew gets off the helicopter. And what is the first thing that they see?
The guns. And that's the only part. That's the only part that you instantly feel like, okay, this is a bad place. But after so that, they do a good job. And it makes sense because as viewers, they do a good job at getting us to forget about that, but also get they get the characters to forget about that.
They do a good job of, you know, letting you forget that until, you know, about the midpoint of the film with the interview.
Yeah. There's a complete tonal shift at one scene of the movie. I think we all know what that is. Yeah. And you see it coming, but it still felt like it still was shocking and jarring when it happened. And you knew it was coming.
Two entirely different films. Mm-hmm. From the start, from the, the beginning until that point.
There's a big tonal shift.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that scene is basic. Do you guys have anything else to say about up until the interview? About the film, like, it does seem kind of natural, and it seems kind of, you know,
some of the girls were good looking. I don't know why the fuck they want to go live there.
Well, I think one thing that I noticed though too, right off the hop, was, you know, the fact that this I don't know what you want to call it, village or whatever, was very multicultural too.
Yeah, there's a lot of different races.
Yeah, and that was one of the big things was one of the big four things that he said is wrong with, you know, the outside world, and one of them was racism.
Yeah, that was like the biggest thing though, racism and violence.
I like the structure of, you know, when they're doing these, you know, these kind of minor interviews and stuff with the people of, you know, the cult, like the village and stuff like that. The structure was interesting. Like they interviewed like an older person right away. And then the next person was like this young girl, like she's like 19 or 20 or whatever it was. Yeah. And then they interviewed like a kind of a mid-level person. So they were covering all the grounds and they were showing you exactly who was there. There was everybody from,
and then like, and they interviewed
seniors too. Yeah, exactly. Seniors to like, you know, teenage people to like, you know, middle-aged people and stuff. Yeah. I thought that was very effective because it really does show you that, oh wow, we've got everybody there. And then you see infants, yeah, and then yeah, you're like, holy shit, there's actually a real community here.
Which in turn makes it more, to the characters, it makes it more believable because it's not just a bunch of crazy people. There's old women, there's young street kids, there's young female nurses, like, and it's like, wow, okay.
And they all talk, like, you know, and that like was normal people, like all friendly, like when he's talking to the nurse, you know, she's like, oh, the friendliest lady ever. But you know, some shady shit's going down.
Because we watch movies, but to the characters, it feels like it makes sense that they would be like, well, maybe this is maybe this is not a crazy cult thing. Maybe they are like really happy.
And they show that too, though, because like I said, you know, they executed those interviews perfectly and they totally show the viewer that all these people are quite normal, all different ages and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, Buddy's playing basketball with those black guys from the hood.
Yeah, the hood kids.
And it kind of shows you like, holy shit, these guys are normal. We can actually interact and, you know, have fun with these guys. There's really not that anything extreme going on here. No. And then there's an interview.
And I honestly think that interview was still with tone of that, of the beginning of the film.
Yeah,
I think the little girl scene is the scene that completely changes the tone of the film.
Yep.
Well, totally. I think that moment definitely is, you know, probably the moment that should be. But for me, I mean, obviously, you know, I do say the little girl, but the one scene in the interview when the father, played by, what's his name again? Gene Jones.
He's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Gene Jones. Really, really great performance, I might add. It was fucking phenomenal. He was so believable. He was just fantastic, especially in that interview scene. Holy shit, dude. His answers were creepy and fucking very believable. When he basically tells, I can't remember the guy, I'm so bad
with
names.
It's A.J. Bowen.
A.J. Bowen's character. He basically, or, you know, the father says to him, he goes, you know, something about his pregnant wife, and he's just like, excuse me?
Yeah, like, how do you know that? I didn't know that.
And then they kind of chalk it up to, well, it was mentioned to some other people, and maybe it got back to him, and blah, 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 but they're not convinced. And you get that sense of, like,
oh, something's going to
happen. Vulnerability. You get that sense of vulnerability right there. You're like, holy shit, like, we're kind of exposed. Like, there's, you know, something might go on.
I also looked at it like A.J. Bowen's character saw why all these people look at him as such a great leader, because the way he was able to turn that on A.J. Bowen, and A.J. Bowen considers himself a smart man, and to be manipulated like that, he's like, wow, okay. I mean, this guy is legit. And but you can tell that the father kind of feeds A.J. Bowen by saying, like, I don't believe you would do that with the story because I can see it in you or whatever. And, you know, totally plays to what he would want to hear.
And I love the scene right after they're done with that, because he's obviously shook up, right? He's obviously shook up from his answers.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, I only got like a quarter way through my questions. And he's like, and the quarter of the questions that I asked, I'm not even sure if he even answered them the way I wanted him to.
Yeah.
You know,
he was genuinely impressed.
Exactly. He was like, holy shit, like, this guy is really kind of the real deal. I thought that was really effective. Really, really effective. And then literally right at that scene – is when the little girl,
and that was chilling happens. How that was done. Loved how that was done. I truly did love it.
Did you watch the little girl?
She's like bangs on the door and is like,
yeah, she looks up, but she looks at the camera.
Yeah.
She looks directly to the camera, and it's kind of shadowed. You have to actually look at her, and she hands the note, and she's looking at the camera, and then she fucking bolts off, and then they read it.
And like, I loved A.J. Bowen's reaction, and Joe Swanberg, who Joe Swanberg was in Proxy. I like both of these guys a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love their reactions to that. And then it's pretty much just, you know, full speed ahead from there. And you can't really talk about it too much. But there's one scene, man. I know you guys know the scene too. Oh, it's it's a brother sister scene, man. And I just
that scene was
done so well acted. And I literally I was laying down watching this last night, and I sat up.
Yeah, that's the one scene in the film that really fucked with my head. And that doesn't happen. You don't hear me say that very often, but that was one scene that really fucked with my head.
Oh man, that fucking scene, man. I was like, what the fuck? I literally said it out loud. I was like, holy fuck. That was one of three scenes in this film that really got to me.
Yeah, there were, and I know the third one you're probably thinking of too. And you know, it was like 3 a.m. I had to wake up at like 6 a.m. to go to work, and I'm laying down, like, you know, getting through the sacrament. And when that scene happened, I literally sat up and was like, and it's there's one particular moment I can almost pinpoint, the moment that just sends chills up my spine, and it's his. It's the first reaction to what happened, and I was like, man, that is just sad, and I just feel that.
Yeah, that, you know, that scene blew my mind, man.
Yeah, great scene,
so good.
Ty West, bravo.
Yeah.
There was some, honestly, there was some pretty good cinematography in this film too. Mm-hmm. You know, the way the cameras were kind of manipulated a little bit, and you know. But the uses of dropping the cameras and just having people come into focus and stuff. I mean, there's probably one scene with Father. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Or the one scene where he's hiding under the bed and the guy comes with the gun.
Yeah,
looks good on Blu-ray too.
Yeah. Oh man, the Blu-ray looks amazing. Like, it looks really, really good.
That scene's pretty fucked up too.
Getting back to the interview, there was a basically a quote from Father that he says, and I thought it was very chilling, but very awesome. Like, you know, just the way it was executed, it was so honest, and it actually makes sense, because, you know, they're starting to think that this guy has a lot of power over the, you know, his people and stuff like that. And he says something on the lines of, you know, in society, why would you fight the battle when you can just, you know, remove yourself from the battle completely?
Yeah. And that's what makes these cult leaders so good, is because they're not just spitting out like crap. You know, some legit.
Even to me, when I'm watching, I go, fuck, that makes a lot of sense, man. Yeah. You know? And I'm like, damn, that's really good. Really good dialogue.
It reminded me of the scene in, you know, this is totally unrelated, but American History X, when young Ed Norton is talking to his father, and you can see how he would be persuaded into that thinking by the things that his father is saying when he's talking about, you know, how the jobs are offered to, you know, people, even though they're not the best available people and stuff because of, like, race and stuff. And it kind of reminded me of that in a way, of just, like, how easily you can agree with him, because it's like he's saying things that do make sense.
You know, even like right in the beginning of the film too, before, you know, kind of everybody kind of gets, you know, I mean, the crew kind of starts to realize what the fuck is going on here. There's something about hearing an automated voice over a PA that is so fucking unsettling.
Especially when everybody is like, straight up, like, listening to it. Like, you know, just,
I know,
it's their main focus. They drop everything in turn, you know, like stuff like that.
It literally says, "Okay, people, go to bed," and they just like drop their, you know, their bowl of, you know, whatever, and just go to bed.
You know, like, and what's crazy about, like,
holy shit, it's really scary.
What's crazy about the cult thing is, like, sometimes you want to say, like, well, how the hell would somebody convince a bunch of people to do, you know, this or that? But it happened. It happens. Yeah. It happens. It's happened multiple times in history.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And, you know, this story right here is Ty West's interpretation of Jim Jones.
Yeah, it's fictionalized, but it is, you know, exactly a good solid representation. Yeah.
So if anyone's familiar with the Jonestown Massacre, this is Ty West's version of it, and it's like really – it's executed well, really, really well in my opinion. I think the last 30 minutes are just – last 40 minutes of this film is just so fucking unsettling. Yeah. And I haven't watched a movie in a while where I was – there was multiple times where I felt so uncomfortable on scenes where I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you know, I found myself – kind of squirming in my seat and turning, and I was like, this is so bad. You know, I'm just, oh, it's so effective. It's yeah. just good filmmaking. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. You know, there's not too many films that do that to me, but
do you feel that it should have been filmed this way, the like found footage type?
It had to be.
I think it works. I think it really does work because that angle, especially for, you know, how
it's very non-Ty Westy. That's the thing.
Yeah,
that's,
but I don't think it had to be, man.
That's why I think it kind of works.
I do
so
think
well
it works.
Well, it's not something that Ty West would normally do.
If you don't do it like the found footage style, then you have to replace the actual story, in my opinion. Like, you can't just have a documentary crew show up here and not be documenting anything.
They can be documenting. You just don't have to see it.
But I think it's effective, though. I think it's effective because it shows exactly what they're going through, and you're seeing it through their cameras, which is their eyes, right?
Yeah, which That's what's effective about it, is if you feel like you're part of it.
Exactly. Especially the scene where Buddy's underneath the bed, and you know, some person gets fucking totally in that.
Yeah.
Like, that's brutal, man. And that's one of those scenes where you're like, fuck, man. See, that the found footage element really does work at that moment, because
yeah,
you don't see it, but you hear it, and fuck, man.
Which is always when found footage is most effective, is when it does have the ability to make you feel like you are part of it. And I would honestly say,
exactly.
I think that Ty West's best film.
Yeah,
hands down. I think this might even be his best film.
Yeah, it's close.
That's a good sign. That's a good sign when you're still on the upswing.
I know Jeremy was trying to get to the point of, you know, this isn't very Ty West, but I think it's a good thing.
No, yeah. You're right. Yeah, you know, Jeremy, he did something a little different. That we kind of glossed over,
because you have to think about it. Watching Ty West films, he rarely, rarely, rarely uses outdoor sceneries. I mean, in House of the Devil, you just see the girl walk around, you know, walk to campus, and, you know, that's it. And in Innkeepers, you rarely, rarely, rarely ever go outside. So to see him shoot pretty much this entire film outside shows a side of Ty West that we haven't really seen before. And even with the found footage, I mean, you could say he directed the segment in VHS, but, you know, that's not a feature like this.
I mean, there's scenes in House of the Devil where they're outside, you know. I mean,
yeah,
there's
but not
obviously
much
little
like this.
No, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So
it just feels wide. It feels big, you know. Unlike all of his other films, I would say probably.
It's definitely not claustrophobic. Mm-hmm.
Like even The Roost feels very tiny and tight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is actually, well, filmed kind of like it's outside.
Yeah, yeah, but it stuff, still feels very like tight.
Well, it feels. Early Ty West, it's a different type of feel.
Yeah,
I think his films right after that were completely different than The Roost, but this one right here definitely separates itself in his filmography.
And it's good. It's good because
it's daring.
You don't want to get you know, too pigeonholed into being a certain way. You know, it shows that he has range and scope, and he can do a lot of things. And I think this was the perfect film for him to tackle. And I think that, you know, this story, I'm surprised it hasn't been told yet, you know, like this good, you know, it's definitely something that was, I'm so glad he did it. Cause I think we all could agree that this is a really awesome film, and it was a great film to pick for the first show.
Yeah.
Back. Yeah.
It blew my expectations, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
I did not think it was going to be this good.
I'm almost surprised it didn't have more buzz.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about this one. Because, like I said, I avoided all trailers, reviews, any type of propaganda about the film. I just kind of fucking just I separated myself purposely until I watched it today, and I literally didn't sit back in my seat once.
Yeah.
I sat on the edge of my fucking my sofa and just watched this film, and I didn't move.
How did you feel about the ending? I liked it. I liked the ending completely. All of it. The whole end, the whole final end. I thought it really worked because I wasn't expecting it, for one. And, you know, these characters are likable. Both of them. Mm-hmm. I've liked both characters, both of the main lead characters, a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I like about this film, though, you know, like the main characters are, you know,
normal people.
Yeah, you know, you got the cameraman, and then you got, you know, the journalist, right? But the main focus of the film is about, you know, Buddy.
You would almost think, Buddy, looking at them, like, that their roles would have been reversed. You know, like, AJ Bowen kind of looks like a camera guy. And I really like
how it, you know, kind of all develops and stuff. And there's some, yeah, it's just, it's really good. It's really good. So I don't know what else is. There's so many scenes that I want to talk about. I just don't want to ruin keep anything it for anybody.
Free for the most part. I mean, there's the big, you know.
Just watch the fucking movie because it's awesome.
I love how Tom from Horseball would say,
just fucking buy it.
Yeah, yeah, buy it on Blu-ray. It's worth it.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm done.
Yeah.
So Moods, what's your rating on this one?
Oh man, I get to go first on this one.
Yep.
You know, to be honest, this is another. It's been a really good couple weeks of film watching for me. Watched a lot of really good films, given some really high ratings. I don't know, but if I really had to break this down on all elements of film, I think Ty West did a fantastic job with this. Cast was fantastic. I thought cinematography was good.
Acting was good.
Acting was just fucking phenomenal.
Little to no flaws.
No. Yeah, the sets were. I thought the sets were awesome. They looked authentic. You know what? You know, one of these cult type things would look like. I think everything was really well executed. I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10. I really do recommend it. I think there's some fucking super uneasy parts that really are so effectively executed, and it's just something that someone needs to see. If you're not a fan of Ty West,
you're not probably not
other good. Films.
It doesn't even matter because I think this one would, you know, very.
This movie is nothing like his other films. Yeah. His other movies are a lot of like real slow burns and stuff. This one kind of starts halfway through.
Yeah, it's kind of slow burn.
It's a little bit, but
I don't think it is.
But the thing is, this one actually starts about the midway point. I mean, to get to, like, you know, the crazy craziness in the film. But up into that point, everything that is shown in the film is, you know, is relevant. Everything is relevant. The interview, you know, introducing, you know, all the, you know, the characters and stuff in the film, and showing what's going on and stuff. Everything's relevant. It's not slow. It's interesting. And I think it's really, honestly, and truly his best film so far. 9 out of 10. Really, really good film.
What about you, Jeremy?
I have to agree with Moods. I also gave it a 9 out of 10. Definitely Ty West's best film. You know, if you guys, you know, check it out. I don't, like I said, it's a film that it's kind of hard to talk about, but it has really, really fucking fantastic acting, and some scenes that are really, 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 really fucked in my mind a little bit. I really haven't had too much of those feelings since I watched Compliance about, you know, a year and a half ago. So check it out. It's fucking good. It definitely will be high on my list when we come to the end of the year show. So I give it a 9 out of 10 as well.
Also, just another quick note about, you said the scenes that really mess with you. I think Ty West did a great job of showing the appropriate amount of the scenes that mess with you.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
And it's not really – they're not really graphic scenes, to be completely honest.
Yeah, he doesn't show too much.
They're just
– But that's why they're so effective. It's
psychological, and it just fucks with your mind.
That's why it's so effective, because what is shown is so real.
Yeah.
You know, it's fucked, man. But, yeah.
Okay, I'm kind of in the 8.5 to 9 range, but I think you guys talked me up to a 9 at least. I mean, it – I guess 9.
Holy shit, man. So 3 nines, that's a 27?
Out of 30.
Whoa.
That would have almost made our Hall of Fame.
Yeah, almost make it our Hall of Fame. That's crazy. Crazy.
It's a good fucking film, man.
You know, I gotta say, man, I haven't watched a shit ton of 2014 films, but
Best one I've seen so far.
The ones I have watched this year, I seem to be watching a lot of good ones. So I'm finding that this year has been really good. I am catching up on a lot of films. But this year has got a lot of really solid films, and I'm really looking forward to the year end. I know this is our first show and we're already talking about the year end show, but I think it's going to be a fantastic year end show because there's some really damn good films to talk about, man.
Yeah. Honestly, so. I haven't seen as many good ones as you, to be honest. I think that this year is nowhere near as good as last year so far. I still got a lot to watch, though. I've only seen, you know, under 10 films from 2014, I guess. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is definitely the best one I've seen so far.
I just ordered, you know, you guys have probably heard the buzz about Pieces of Talent. It's an independent film. A lot of people are talking about it and stuff. I just ordered it up, but everyone's saying it's like one of the best films this year. Hmm. And I'm just really, really fucking stoked. And of course, Dustin Mills' new film just shipped, Snuff It. You know, so I'm just super stoked to watch this. So we'll see if, you know, he has another film making my top 10 this year. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's shaping up to be a really interesting year. Really interesting. So, yeah.
Is that it?
Yep.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the 23rd episode, a.k.a. the first episode of the second season of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. Of course, Mood616 was the host. And, of course, if you want to follow him on his channel, you can do so at youtube.com/Mood616. Of course, if you want to follow me on my channel, you can do so at youtube.com/NESRule22. And, of course, if you want to follow the man JP, a.k.a. the man who hates Pee Wee Herman, you can follow him on his channel at youtube.com/DoubleShotJ. And, of course, you can always email us your questions or any suggestions at 22shotsofmoodsandhorror@gmail.com. That's an A-N-D, not the and symbol. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at 22shotspodcast. And you can always listen to us on TheDevilsEyes.com, and I have some written reviews and some other stuff over there as well, so enjoy that. Thank you again, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next week with the 24th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. I hope everyone had a fantastic summer and enjoyed the first episode back.